Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at CashCreek.com.
M1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. Streaming live at 1320LeftChannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. They are alive, and considering what they've been through, they are well. Three fallen climbers and their dog, located on an icy ledge on Oregon's Mount Hood, where they huddled together against whiteout conditions. Good thing those stranded climbers had a locator device with them.
They were found via an MLU, a mountain locator unit. Everything they did was right. In fact, everything the climbers did in this occasion was right, which makes the big difference between a rescue, a successful rescue, and a recovery.
Clackamas County Sheriff Nick Watt there. He says the climbers and their rescuers are heading back down Mount Hood right now. More American and Iraqi blood spilled today. CBS's Cammie McCormick with details of the brazen attack on a military outpost.
The attack was launched first by a suicide car bomber who tried to make his way into the outpost. He detonated his explosives outside. Then clashes reportedly broke out between U.S. forces and militants. The U.S. military also announced today the deaths of three Marines and one soldier killed in Anbar province since Saturday.
The military announcing nine Americans killed in Iraq since then. There are increasing reports of increasing activity by al-Qaeda, particularly in Pakistan. New York Times reporting today, Osama bin Laden and his circle are reestablishing control of their terror network. Terror expert MJ Gohel posing the question,
why is it that al-Qaeda individuals feel so safe and feel so comfortable in living in Pakistan when supposedly General Musharraf of Pakistan is supposed to be an ally in this war on terrorism?
XM or Sirius? Soon to be the same thing, or at least in the same happy media family. Here's CBS's Dan Revive.
After secret negotiations,
only an XM satellite.
XM, based here in Washington, and Sirius, based in New York City,
channels of Sirius satellite
intend to become one company if federal regulators agree, which is far from certain, a question of maintaining competition. But XM and Sirius, famous for hiring Howard Stern, may argue that without a merger, they could die. Their stock prices have plummeted. Their debt is high. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
JetBlue, recovering from a black and blue beating.
We currently have service to 51 destinations, so approximately 40 cities we're continuing our service to.
Airline VP Todd Burke, after a series of rolling cancellations that snowballed after last week's storm, JetBlue does expect to return to a normal schedule tomorrow. Suicide, why would someone do it? CBS's Barry Bagnato with news about that troubling question.
Could it someday be possible to do a test to determine whether someone is prone to commit suicide? In a study of family members, Johns Hopkins researchers have traced suicide tendencies to a certain genetic area. They say this is the third study to find such a link. Now that researchers have found the neighborhood, they'll try to pinpoint the exact suicide gene and develop ways to identify people who face a higher risk. This new study appears in Biological Psychiatry.
This is CBS News.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
Running out of ink? Run into Office Depot. With over 500 ink, toner, and fax supplies guaranteed in-store and thousands more online, Office Depot has what you need at unbeatable prices. Save more by recycling empty ink and toner cartridges. When you think ink, let Office Depot lend you a hand. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Oh, Office Depot!
See store for details.
This is President's Day, right?
Though many of us call this President's Day, under federal law, it remains Washington's birthday. And to commemorate this year's 275th anniversary of that event, President Bush paid a visit to Washington's Mount Vernon estate.
I feel right at home here. After all, this is the home of the first George W.
And it sounded like Mr. Bush was using Washington's fight for freedom to defend his policy in Iraq, declaring that today, America is fighting a new war to defend our liberty, our people, and our way of life. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
Will Donald Trump follow Britney's lead? A match called the Battle of the Billionaires. The Donald will take on World Wrestling Entertainment owner Vince McMahon. Well, virtually. Each will pick a wrestler to represent him. The loser gets his head shaved after the match. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News. Okay.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
From our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
There's no need to fear. Underdog is here.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. It is Monday, February 19th, 2007, President's Day. Happy President's Day. It's 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the show, apparently there is excellent skiing on the moon.
Whee! Boy, when you do this and you go down slope, that first step is a long one.
More on that in just a moment. Also on the show this hour, we'll talk about the Democrats' evolving strategy on the Iraq War with Steve Clemens, director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation, publisher of the Washington Note. You always have to get your Washington Insider report on a Monday after the Congress went to work on a Saturday. That never happens. Plus, a big-time Republican donor gets indicted for funding terrorism, big time. That's all coming up this hour. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. About 30 miles north of Baghdad, there is a Sunni town of about 25,000 people, a town called Tarmiya, I think is how you say it. It's T-A-R-M-Y-I-A. The local Iraqi police there apparently fled after a campaign of intimidation against them by al-Qaeda. After the police fled, the U.S. moved some American troops into a combat outpost there. Now, generally speaking, insurgents of all stripes in Iraq have avoided directly attacking fortified U.S. bases. They'll sometimes lob mortars over the wall, or they'll try to hit U.S. troops with sniper fire or IEDs, but they don't generally full frontally assault dug-in U.S. military positions. Today, a large-scale coordinated direct attack on that U.S. combat outpost. It started with a suicide bomber blowing up a fuel tanker just at the perimeter of the base. It was then followed by two more suicide car bombs and a number of gunmen. Two American soldiers were killed and 17 were wounded. Reporters in Iraq today described the helicopter flights into and out of this combat outpost to evacuate the wounded soldiers. They're describing those helicopter flights as daring. Here's Brian Murphy in Baghdad for the Associated Press.
From all appearances, it seems like a well-planned and highly coordinated attack by suspected Sunni insurgents.
In addition to that attack in Tarmiya, the U.S. military announced the deaths of three Marines and one Army soldier, all killed in fighting in Anbar province. Also, you may remember when I reported that the much heralded closing of the borders with Iran and Syria was only going to last for 3 days. That three-day border closing is done now. Their borders are back open again. Do you feel different? Finally, this may end up being tomorrow's major headline on Iraq, if not here, then probably in the Arabic language press. And that is that on Al Jazeera tonight, an Iraqi woman claimed that she was raped in Baghdad by 8 members of the Iraqi National Police. No comment thus far from the U.S. or Iraqi governments. Next hour on the show, we're going to be hosting Paul Rykoff from Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, getting his take on the bombshell series in the Washington Post yesterday and today about the appalling conditions for outpatient wounded soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in the Washington area, and also about the Army Times bombshell report that I think is only being overshadowed right now because that Washington Post story is such a big deal. The Army Times story about disability benefits and the difficulty that wounded Iraq vets are having getting disability ratings from the VA. Paul Rykoff and Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America have been raising those issues in interviews on this show and in interviews whenever they can get them for months, if not more than a year now. But they're now finally getting some really big national press. We're going to talk about that with Paul next hour. Remember Al-Qaeda? Remember Osama bin Laden?
I don't know where he is. Nor do, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him. And, you know, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Mark Mazzetti and David Rohde in the New York Times today cite American intelligence and counterterrorism officials, and they're reporting that Osama bin Laden is doing better than ever. Bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri, who is the number two guy in al-Qaeda, have, according to today's New York Times, reestablished significant control over their worldwide terrorism network. They've even set up al-Qaeda training camps again in Afghanistan and in Pakistan in the tribal regions near the Afghan border.
We are winning.
I'm not sure in what sense we're winning, but it sure feels good to say we are winning. Also, remember back when those four al-Qaeda guys escaped from Bagram, from the U.S. air base in Afghanistan? It was back in the summer of 2005, and part of the reason that it was big news is because they didn't tell us that there had been these escapes from Bagram for a long time. ABC News is reporting now that one of those four escapees is showing up in al-Qaeda videos now. One of the guys who escaped from Bagram in 2005 is now being touted by the al-Qaeda AV Club as an al-Qaeda regional field commander who's responsible for directing attacks on U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan. Today in Washington, the president at the helm of this disaster compared himself to George Washington.
I feel right at home here. After all, this is the home of the first George W.
Yeah. Bush was at Mount Vernon for the 275th birthday of George Washington. The first George W. Bush also compared the war in Iraq, the war on terror, to the Revolutionary War.
Washington's long struggle for freedom has also inspired a generation of Americans to stand for freedom in their own time. Today we're fighting a new war to defend our liberty and our people and our way of life.
And you know, when you think about it, the Revolutionary War, where we fought for independence and self-determination from a colonial empire halfway around the world, that is just like us invading Iraq in 2003. And you know, George W. Bush is just like George Washington when you think about it. After Bush gave his speech comparing himself to George Washington and comparing the Downing Street memos to the Declaration of Independence, after that was over, a recording of the 3rd U.S. Infantry Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps playing patriotic music blared over the loudspeakers. The real 3rd U.S. Infantry Old Guard Fife and Drum Corps couldn't make it today, so they sent a tape. They thought the cold might damage their historic fifes and drums, so Bush's speech comparing himself to George Washington was instead set to a canned soundtrack. Thank God for small poetic justices. Prince Harry may be deploying to Iraq, the younger son of Princess Diana. Here's Charles de Ledesma for the Associated Press.
The government has confirmed that Harry could go to Iraq if his unit was deployed there, but said he might be kept out of situations where his presence would jeopardize his comrades. His brother, Prince William, training as a troop leader, cannot be deployed to war zones because he's second in line to the British crown.
CNN reports today that the British equivalent of the Secret Service, which is the part of the Metropolitan Police that's responsible for Harry's safety, they have that unit of policemen have sent people to Iraq already to make security arrangements in the event of Harry's deployment to Iraq. The Daily Mail newspaper in Britain today says Harry's fellow soldiers have started calling him Bullet Magnet, since presumably anyone with an axe to grind and an AK-47 would be shooting his way once he was in a war zone. A royal source tells the Daily Mail it's possible that his police protection unit might still oversee his safety while he was deployed in Iraq. How on earth that would work? While he was fighting in a war in Iraq, I am not sure, but I would like somebody to investigate how quickly we can make every American soldier in Iraq a member of the British royal family. And finally, in just a moment, I will be joined by Steve Clements of the Washington Note to talk about the Senate filibuster of the Iraq War resolution this weekend. A majority of the House and a majority of the Senate have effectively now said they are opposed to Bush's escalation of the Iraq War. But the Republicans prevented an actual up or down vote on it in the Senate by using the filibuster. And yes, that is the minority rights tool that they kept threatening to take away when the Democrats were the minority. We're going to get the political skinny from Steve Clemens on the vote and the expected next steps from Congress coming up in just a moment. But consider also, in the meantime, briefly, two things. Number one, Hillary Clinton has put up something on her website that she calls a roadmap out of Iraq. She's calling for stopping the escalation, not by cutting off funding or setting conditions on funding, but by literally explicitly capping the number of troops we can have in Iraq.
My bill would cap the number of troops in Iraq at January 1st levels. It would be against the law to send more. Congress has done this in other wars. It's the most effective way we have to stop the president's escalation.
Hillary Clinton in a web video describing a bill that she filed this past Friday. She also says that redeployment, which is also called withdrawal, should start within 90 days.
Now it's time to say the redeployment should start in 90 days or the Congress will revoke authorization for this war.
I'm not plighting my troth with anybody in the presidential race at this point, unless, of course, Tom Vilsack would have me. But I have to admit, I kind of like the Hillary web videos. I've never been a huge Hillary fan, but I think she's doing a good job with this format. On the other hand, John McCain, not doing a great job with the format. This is a man who literally would be 80 years old by the time he finished his second term. His age, like it or not, is an issue in his campaign. John McCain unveiled a new website this week that's in black and white. Not a good implication. Perhaps more importantly, though, John McCain skipped the Senate vote on the Iraq resolution this weekend. We knew in advance that he would skip it. He knew in advance that what he did instead of vote on the war would be scrutinized, since he's running for president as the war guy. So what did McCain do? How did he spend his time this weekend when the rest of the Senate was voting on Iraq? He gave a speech to 1,500 South Carolina teenagers telling them not to have sex before they're married. The United States Senate is debating the war in Iraq. Senator McCain, do you have anything to add? Yes. Don't have sex. Thank you, Senator McCain. Now for less pressing news, we turn to Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. Happy Chinese New Year, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
There were huge celebrations across the Chinese world yesterday to usher in the year of the golden pig.
That'll do, Peggy. That'll do.
According to Chinese astrology, people born in the year of the pig are supposed to be lucky, polite, honest, hardworking, and loyal. Pig-born folk are also considered prosperous, encouraging many Chinese to have babies this year. The Chinese love to tell the ancient story about the lucky pig who just keeps eating and eating, stuffing itself with delicious American debt.
That'll do, Peggy. That'll do.
Committing what may be the very first spontaneous act of her entire career, Britney Spears appeared in a tattoo parlor in the San Fernando Valley with her head shaved completely bald. Salon owner Esther Tognazzi told CNN how it happened.
I tried to talk her out of it. I said, are you sure you're not having a bad day and tomorrow you'll feel differently about it? Why don't we wait a little bit? She said, no, I absolutely want it shaved off now. And as I was talking to her bodyguard, next thing I know, she grabbed a buzzer and she went to the back of my salon and she was shaving off her own hair, and she actually enjoyed shaving off her own hair.
Exactly, yes. You can debate the aesthetics of her new hairstyle, but consider this. A lot of us sat around complaining about Anna Nicole Smith being on the front page of every newspaper every day, but Britney Spears actually did something about it. Later on Kent Jones Now, it's Mardi Gras. Do you know where your toilet is? Any toilet? Please? Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. I think that's right to see Britney Spears' actions as heroic there. To
absolutely
rescue us all from the Anna Nicole discussion.
Is she on the cover today? No, she is not. Britney Spears and her bald head is on the cover today.
I was on CNN on Howard Kurtz's show on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't have a TV. So when I'm on TV, it's the only time I see TV.
Right.
So I was sitting there waiting for my discussion to start. And, of course, they were having me discuss Anna Nicole.
Oof,
and while it was happening, the news about Britney shaving her head was going by on the crawl on the monitor. I was so fascinated by the Britney Spears news. I think it knocked me off my Anna Nicole game. I think I really didn't have my sharpest political analysis for the Anna Nicole discussion.
Everyone is furious with you.
It was very
for
obvious.
For not enlightening them about the Anna Nicole situation.
That's right. I was on with Michael Medved, and he said something about Aeschylus and Shakespeare.
Sure.
And I just thought, you know what? Britney Spears got her head shaved. Doesn't matter what I do here. That's all anybody can think about right now. All right, it's 19 minutes past the hour. We've got Ask Dr. Maddow, and today's Burying the Lead story coming up.
Rachel Maddow Show loves to answer your questions. Call us at 212-871-8173. Air America Radio.
Have you ever heard of a child?
Sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast.
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. Now, Kaida Sell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw, you might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area, so stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320. Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. Legals.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com. Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Well, this is all settled, don't you think?
I think so, yeah.
27 minutes past the hour. Steve Clemens from the Washington Note joins me next. It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime. And no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
Free is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
I'm the change bandit. Now give me all your change.
How silly. Not like that.
Not like that.
No, just tell them how they can help by collecting the spare change from their friends, family, classmates, and co-workers. And donate to the UC Davis Children's Hospital. All from our good friends at the Sacramento Credit Union.
They can? And all they've got to do is go into the Sacramento Credit Union to find out how they can become a change bandit? Or they can log on to sacradiothon.com? Well, why didn't you say so?
Just be silly.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent Budget and rent like a genius.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Winning without steroids since 2004.
Welcome back. Happy Monday. It is 34 minutes past the hour on this fine President's Day show. Thanks for joining us. In Britain today, police arrested a man in connection with a series of letter bombs sent to offices earlier this year. But Assistant Chief Constable Anton Setchell said today in a news conference that the suspect's arrest does not necessarily mean the danger to the public has passed.
At this stage, I'm still not able to guarantee that there is not another postal package containing an explosive device within the postal system.
The police haven't released many details about the suspect, the man who was arrested, except that he was arrested near Cambridge, England, and that he is in his 20s. Local news in Cambridge is reporting that he is a janitor at a local elementary school, but so far police have not confirmed that. Rumors have been swirling for weeks, but it's finally official. The two main satellite, well, the two only satellite radio providers, XM and Sirius, announced today their intentions to merge into one giant satellite radio company that will rule them all. Sirius Chief Executive Mel Karmazin will become the CEO of the new company if the deal goes through, while XM Chairman Gary Parsons will be chair. If everything goes well, company officials say they expect the transaction to be completed by the end of the year. There are some significant hurdles ahead, however. The merger must be approved by both antitrust and communications regulators. FCC Commissioner Kevin Martin had earlier signaled resistance towards such a deal when it was still in the rumor stage. And finally, the state of New Jersey today became the third state in the country to offer civil unions for gay couples, joining Connecticut and Vermont. Here's Ken Rosato reporting for ABC News.
Some town halls in New Jersey opened at midnight for partners who want to be among the first to file their paperwork. Gay couples wanting a civil union must wait at least 72 hours from when they submit their applications, the same as heterosexual couples filing for marriage.
Civil unions were also automatically granted to hundreds of same-sex couples who had previously been joined in civil unions or married in other states or countries. My congratulations, of course, to folks who were civilly united today in New Jersey. I'm sorry it has to be a second-class citizenship upgrade kind of thing. That said, a second-class citizenship upgrade is better than what it was before, right? The House and Senate are in recess this week, but the Senate worked on Saturday. On a Saturday? Yeah. Apparently, Barbara Boxer wore a pink hoodie and clogs to the Saturday session. Casual Saturday. But the business at hand was very serious. What is the Congress going to do about the war? Joining us to parse this weekend's key developments is Stephen Clemens. He's the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation, and he's publisher of thewashingtonnote.com. Steve Clemens, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you.
The Republicans did successfully filibuster the Senate resolution against the escalation. Any surprise there for you?
No, it was unfortunate, and it was a continuation of the, you know, the gaming that was going on between Mitch McConnell and Trent Lott on one side with Reid and Durbin. The folks behind nearly all the decent resolutions were very frustrated with both sets of leaders.
Well, do you think that the Senate is now has an obvious next step? Harry Reid has said that they will no longer spend any time on non-binding resolutions. And that was certainly the main tone of the criticism, I think left and right, of the non-binding resolutions in both the House and the Senate. I'm starting to worry that for those of us who really want the Congress to take some action to end the war, they might have spun out a lot of time and a lot of goodwill and a lot of their honeymoon period after the election on these resolutions that, in the end, don't do anything.
I think that's absolutely right. I wouldn't just put it on Harry Reid. I think both sides essentially created an epic battle that was designed to fail and not bring either the more substantive resolutions forward that might have been a guide path for, you know, more binding and appropriations-related legislation. I think these other kinds of legislation are going to happen anyway. But what's unfortunate is that everyone – I was just on mydd.com and looking at the fact that there are Chris Bowers there, you know, notes four different – Democratic game plans for proceeding. I know of two or three others. Dianne Feinstein has initiated a new resolution as well in some things that she's doing. So that would be five, and there are probably going to be some more. And that's even before you get to Hagel and Snow and Norm Coleman and others who've been trying very hard to put some distance between themselves and the White House, as many of them are up for election in 2008. So you're going to see a lot of stuff coming forward, and a lot of it will have some teeth, but almost none of it will pass because there won't be the focus and the spotlight and the engines that were in place to you know, that there were on Saturday. I was sort of depressed to see Reid let folks go home. I thought it would have been good for Reid to turn this around and keep all these Republicans out of their shopping malls and fundraisers for the next week and just make the point that, you know, this is an extremely important issue, binding or non-binding, and if McConnell and Trent Lott want to, you know, burn up, you know, all of the Senate's time, that's fine.
But, and they could do that procedurally because a filibuster is technically something that doesn't end unless you end it, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so you could just stay there all week, you know, fiddling your thumbs, talking about things, you know, going down to the floor. And it would have been, I think, an important opportunity for at least for Democrats and centrist Republicans to see that the Congress wasn't just going out of recess while, you know, American men and women are fighting there. But I think that message has been lost, and it's a bit disappointing because when you see the kinds of resolutions come forward, I understand why Harry Reid doesn't want to spend any more time on it because McConnell's, you know, figured out a way to block him effectively.
Yeah.
You know, 50 votes is not enough.
Right. But, you know, Steve, I have to say, I think I disagree with you about the idea that this resolution, this non-binding resolution, would be the one to kind of, I mean, I know you're not technically kind of blowing your wad on this. You could do that every time. You could hold them every time they try to filibuster. I don't know that I would have wanted Reid to hold them over for this one. And there's so many other proposals out there right now. We certainly got a very concrete proposal from Hillary Clinton, of all people, on Friday. Barack Obama's put stuff out there. Senator Feinstein, as you said, we've heard from Jack Murtha what he wants to do. Pelosi has made some noises in support of what Murtha has put forward. The Congressional Progressive Caucus has put forward a plan. And I feel like
those plants have real teeth.
They're
really good. And so your point that these are better than, you know, these non-binding resolutions.
They're all better.
Are much better.
And before they decided to go forward with these simple non-binding resolutions that they did put up in both houses, there were a million plans too. But through leadership and through discipline within the Democratic caucus, they were able to whittle it down to this one thing. I don't necessarily like what they picked, but I don't believe that having a multiplicity of plans out there right now means that they're going to go forward in an unorganized way and put each one of them up to lose. At least I hope they don't.
Yeah, I hope they don't, too. We'll have to see how it plays out. Murtha's proposal is getting a lot of airtime, and I think Hillary's obviously will and Obama's will. You've got a lot of folks on the Democratic side that both need to put good ideas forward but also need to differentiate themselves from their competitors.
Yes.
And that's a good thing. People need to know. I think that's a very, very good thing. The more we have focused on interesting approaches to leapfrogging, if possible, over the unbelievable mess we have is very good. I just hope that we win some of these, and getting those 60 votes is going to be tough. But I think it is doable if the American public gets engaged, because there are 21 Republican Senate seats open in 2008. And I think there are 12 Democrats that are open in the next race. So you've got 21 Republican seats. It's a lot of pressure that Americans can bring on those senators that are up this next time. And so we've got 7 basically, and we need 3 more to vote consistently on these sides. And I think that's doable.
We've got 7 Republicans who have been willing to vote with the Democrats thus far. Yeah,
that's right. 7 and really 8 if you count Voinovich, although he defected this time. But Arlen Specter came over. Voinovich, Olympia Snow, Susan Collins, Norm Coleman, Chuck Hagel. This is a good list. So 3 more, and McConnell's reign ends on this issue.
In case you're just joining us, our guest is Steve Clements, who's the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation and publisher of the WashingtonNote.com. Steve, let me ask you, just as a matter of, I guess, of political strategy, you mentioned the fact that there are vulnerable Republican senators, certainly, who've got to be watching their votes and thinking about how they're going to come back to haunt them in campaign ads. You can also hear in the Democratic rhetoric, and particularly in the rhetoric coming out of the White House on this, that they're trying to make Democrats look bad for 2008 by repeatedly kind of goading the Democrats and repeatedly going back to this issue by saying, make it about the funding, make it about the funding. These are fake votes. These don't do anything. We dare you to make this about the funding. And the president himself, Tony Snow, a lot of congressional Republicans are really daring the Democrats to actually make this a debate about funding and cutting off the power of the purse. Do you feel like they've figured out those politics right, that really would be so politically damaging for the Democrats?
Well, I think with the way the White House is framing it, I do think they've got something. What I'm frustrated with is why the Democrats are allowing the framing to remain there. If I were in Hillary Clinton's shoes, I'd be turning it back and say, you know, you've got more money pumping through the Pentagon today, including the Iraq supplementals, than all other nations' defense expenditures combined. Not just the top 10 or top 20 nations. All other nations in the world equal our Pentagon and defense spending. And our security deliverables, the stuff that makes Americans feel safe, is declining. How can that be? I would turn it back on them, turn it back on management, and say it's not just a function of resources and money. And yes, we're going to curtail money because the management is bad, and management is not. It took how long to get rid of Don Rumsfeld? Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that they could be turning back on the miserable management of this operation. From everything, you know, I remember when Chris Dodd did a very creative thing. He had a thing on his website where soldiers and families that had bought armor for their servicemen or servicewomen in the military could go back through Chris Dodd's website and apply for refunds from the Pentagon for what they had been doing personally. Mm-hmm. There are things like that are missing for some reason in the retort that I think is very possible. But as things are framed now, sure, the White House is winning this because no one's challenging that narrative, which I think is very, very vulnerable.
I think for anybody to come back hard like that on the issue of Pentagon waste and the amount of money that's been thrown away and that, you know, 363 tons of shrink-wrapped bricks of $100 bills, you know, disappeared down Paul Bremer's footlocker, You know, that I can imagine a Republican taking that take, but I cannot imagine any of the Democratic presidential contenders taking that because they're
Doesn't
so gun shy.
Doesn't that disappoint you?
Yes.
Doesn't that disappoint
they're
you?
So gun shy on the issue of national security. They're so afraid of looking soft on national security because they've bought the Republican frame that Republicans are tough on national security despite all evidence to the contrary.
You
makes
know,
me
had,
crazy.
I had a few minutes recently with Hillary Clinton at a reception for Mohammed Yunus, who won the Nobel Peace Prize this year, and she was there early, and I was there early, and her husband was there, and we got a chance to talk, and I said, well, why not take the opportunity? And I told her, I said, you know, I was surprised that on so many issues she seemed and sounded like she was running, you know, in the same groove as George Bush, if not to the right occasionally of George Bush, you know, which is a pretty dramatic thing. And I said, you know, for a Democrat to reframe, to get beyond this chip on the shoulder over Democrats not being able to handle national security, I said, you know, you have to talk about the kind of wars that you would endorse. You have to talk about the kinds of deployment of force that you would agree to. But you also need to talk about contingencies of the 21st century that America needs to really be serious about. And if you take those contingencies, whether they are, you know, global warming and pestilence and, you know, mass migration out of, you know, areas where you've got failed states, and then you look into, you know, terrorism is one of these issues, but you look at that long list, and you can look at how mismatched our military budget, our aid, the kind of dollars that we put into global security are mismatched to those. I said, go out and match them up. That then turns you into a national security maven talking about the future and getting out of these anachronistic structures and spending of the past.
Yeah.
And I think you can run circles around the Republicans. So,
and she looked over your shoulder and said, waiter? I can't imagine.
No, she actually listened, and I may write up something for her and for some of the other Democrats that are running on what that narrative might look like, because I do find it very depressing that you're completely right. Democrats have a hard time coming out hard on this, and the White House knows it. And so we need some new ways of looking at this that make them sound both, you know, strong and smart, not just the bumper sticker strong and smart, but really thinking seriously about national security issues, but also, you know, much more informed about them.
Sure. I was just thinking that you write the smart part of it, and when it needs the bumper sticker, call me, and we'll work on that in the bar. Steve Clemens, thanks a lot. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Rich. Bye-bye.
Steve Clemens is the director of the American Strategy Program at the New America Foundation. He writes the WashingtonNote.com, which is a must-read blog. I have to tell you, I would love for Hillary Clinton to come back and say all of our, or any of the Democratic presidential contenders to come back and say our priorities are wrong and the waste needs to be dealt with and we ought to cut off the military funding on its own grounds, let alone as a strategy for ending this war. I don't expect that's going to happen from the leading Democratic contenders. I think instead we're going to start to hear them calling for strategies that avoid the issue of funding. Things like revisiting the Iraq War authorization, the use of force authorization. Things like directly capping troop numbers without cutting funding for it. I think we're going to hear about that kind of stuff, dodging the issue rather than taking it on. I hope I'm wrong. It's 48 minutes past the hour.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is...
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
The staff at UC Davis Children's Hospital...
Jewish people have to start. The The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to sh- Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins, just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cash Fever Jackpot total and your Cash Club points online now at CashCreek.com. So join Cash Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort. This is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Question authoritatively.
Welcome back. 53 minutes past the hour.
From the Rachel Maddow Show, now it's Kent Jones Now. With Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline San Francisco. At the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, scientists presented results from studies testing the effects on the brain of flavanols, an ingredient found in cocoa, and found that they increase blood flow to the brain and may hold promise for treating some vascular impairments.
Yeah.
Death by chocolate? Apparently not. And who funded this study? Mars, the completely impartial candy maker. Now, I'm not saying the study isn't true, but don't be surprised if the coming months scientists announce that chocolate also increases bust size, cures seasonal affective disorder, and will convince your parents that art school will someday lead to a lucrative career. Rachel?
Thank you, Kent. You know, every day here on the Rachel Maddow Show, we do enjoy poking a sharp stick at the soft white underbelly of American politics, flipping over the day's news to show you the slimy, scheming political tactics at work underneath. Today's underbelly political tactic, Kent, I know you love this one. Blaming the Jews.
Oh. It's thousands of years old.
Exactly. It's an oldie but a goodie, and it's still so darn effective. Check this out. February 9th, so this month, the second-in-command guy in the Texas state legislature, he's the number two Republican in the Republican-controlled Texas House, he sent out a letter to every other member of the Texas legislature, and it was about evolution. It said, tax-supported evolution science is illegal. It's unconstitutional to teach evolution because evolution is actually religion. Evolution is an ancient Jewish plot.
Oh.
Quote, indisputable evidence, long hidden but now available to everyone, demonstrates conclusively that so-called secular evolution science is the Big Bang 15 billion year alternate creation scenario of the Pharisee religion. This scenario is derived concept for concept from rabbinic writings on the mystic holy book Kabbalah dating back at least two millennia.
It's not only the Jews, it's Madonna.
Yeah, apparently.
The email says, if any members of the Texas legislature had questions about the Jewish plot to teach evolution, they could get all their questions answered by going to fixedearth.com, which I immediately did. Fixedearth.com not only clears up the whole Jews and evolution thing, it also clears up the fixed earth issue. Apparently, not only is evolution a Jewish plot, but Copernicus's idea that the earth moves around the sun?
Wow.
That is also anti-Christian and a plot, too. Fixed earth, they mean it literally. The earth is stable and not moving, and everything moves around us.
And not warming either, I'm sure.
The Texas legislator who sent this out has since apologized. He said he got it from a Georgia state legislator.
This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Today is President's Day. Normally, we would use this occasion to ask the dutiful question, who is the greatest president of all time? But since George W. Bush is still in the White House, the opposite question is perhaps more fitting. Who is the worst president of all time? Franklin Pierce and James Buchanan all but enabled the Civil War. Andrew Johnson sided with the Confederates and undermined Reconstruction. Warren Harding was famously corrupt. Herbert Hoover turned the Roaring Twenties into the Great Depression. Richard Nixon expanded the war in Vietnam and was going to be impeached because of Watergate. The Nation magazine recently posed the worst president ever question in an online poll. Most of the above presidents received some votes, but given the state of our country, the outcome was not surprising. The current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue won in a landslide. I'm Ari Berman from The Nation magazine for Air America.
KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel, streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com. More American military deaths in Iraq.
The attack was launched first by a suicide car bomber.
A happy ending on Mount Hood.
We have found the three climbers. All three climbers are mobile.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Peter King. At least two Americans are dead after a suicide car bomb attack on an army base north of Baghdad. CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick.
It was a brazen attack launched against a U.S. combat post north of Baghdad. A suicide bomber tried to break through the barriers and then detonated his explosives outside. Then residents in the area reported clashes between militants and U.S. forces. The attack was one of many throughout the country. There were car bombings and mortar attacks after days of relative quiet.
The bombing brings the U.S. military death toll to 9 since Saturday. President Bush spoke about the war during a President's Day visit to George Washington's home at Mount Vernon, comparing this war to the revolution.
Today we're fighting a new war to defend our liberty and our people and our way of life.
CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports that Al-Qaeda is apparently gaining momentum again.
Al-Qaeda is reportedly showing new strength. Quoting U.S. intelligence and counterterrorism officials, the New York Times reports senior Al-Qaeda leaders have regained control over their terror network. Terror expert MJ Gohel sees a pattern.
Al-Qaeda is once again reorganizing itself.
The Bush administration has described Osama bin Laden as on the run. But according to this published report, U.S. officials believe the most wanted terror leader is regrouping along the rugged border between Afghanistan and Pakistan. Peter Mayer, CBS News. Washington.
Former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld quit back in November, but he's still taking fire, this time from fellow Republican presidential hopeful John McCain. The Arizona senator says the U.S. is paying, quote, a very heavy price for the war's mismanagement.
I think that Donald Rumsfeld will go down in history as one of the worst secretaries of defense in history. And I...
McCain was campaigning in South Carolina. Now this.
Now, you have a very unique accounting system for your boutique.
Yep. I designed my own spreadsheets.
Wow, looks complicated.
That's why I have a cheat sheet for my spreadsheet.
That is one big cheat sheet.
That's just the index.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business.
Really?
Yeah, QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
I'm switching.
Great.
Can you help me fold this back up?
I doubt it. QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
Need professional-looking documents? Office Depot can help. From small jobs to bound presentations, bring in your document or submit it at OfficeDepot.com. We'll ship virtually anywhere. Plus, our work is backed by the Office Depot Satisfaction Guarantee. Office Depot, taking care of business.
Well, Office Depot!
Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
They spent last night stranded on Oregon's Mount Hood, but three climbers should be sleeping in a much warmer place tonight after being rescued this afternoon. Clackamas County Sheriff's Lieutenant Nick Watt.
They were found via an MLU, a mountain locator unit. Everything they did was right. In fact, everything the climbers did in this occasion was right, which makes the big difference between a rescue, a successful rescue, and a recovery.
A huge pay disparity could mean a shortage of primary care physicians. Here's CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato.
Should you feel badly that your family doctor makes $156,000 a year? Yes, says a new Archives of Internal Medicine study, because that median income figure pales in comparison to what specialists make, worsening the growing shortage of medical students choosing general practice careers.
In the next 5 years or so, people are going to have a lot of trouble finding a family doctor.
Don't blame med students, says San Francisco researcher Dr. Thomas Bodenheimer.
With more than $100,000 debt after going to medical school, they want to get into a specialty that pays them more.
Blame the doctor's committee that recommends what procedures are worth, he says, because it's mostly specialists protecting specialists. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
They've been competing and outbidding each other for programming and subscribers, but CBS's Dan Raviv reports that the two major satellite radio providers have decided they'd be better off as one.
After secret negotiations,
owning an XM satellite,
XM based here in Washington, and Sirius based in New York City,
channels of Sirius satellite
intend to become one company if federal regulators agree, which is far from certain, a question of maintaining competition. But XM and Sirius, famous for hiring Howard Stern, may argue that without a merger, they could die. Their stock prices have plummeted. Their debt is high. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
You're listening to the CBS News World News Roundup. Have
you... You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready, new rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
From our studios in New York City, this is the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened.
Welcome to the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. I was sitting back waiting to hear what happened. It's Monday, February 19th, 2007. Happy President's Day. It's 6 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the show this hour...
My job is to protect our troops.
Yeah, but apparently, unless they're, you know, once they're injured and back at Walter Reed, they can fight it out with the rats and the roaches. A shocking expose in the Washington Post reveals that soldiers wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan are coming home to horrendous conditions at the Army's top hospital. We'll talk with Paul Rykoff, Executive Director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, head of the IAVA, and get his thoughts in just a moment. We've also got spooky news from Denver you may not have heard. We've got no more news about Britney Spears. We're done with that for the day. And an important confession about my teenage feelings about Gina Davis. It's all coming up. But first, a quick update on a few of today's top headlines, starting as we do every day here on The Rachel Maddow Show with news from Iraq and life during wartime. On Friday's show, you may recall I was delighted to be able to lead my Iraq coverage with the claim by the Iraqi Prime Minister that the new Baghdad security plan was a brilliant success. Remember that? Granted, I was a little skeptical about the brilliance of the success of the plan, but it was good to be able to report that day. Only 10 corpses showing up in the Baghdad morgue on a Friday morning instead of the usual 40 or 50. With the current news out of Baghdad, the brilliant success, if it ever was true, appears significantly less brilliant. 61 people killed yesterday by bombs in a downtown New Baghdad marketplace. Today, at least 60 Iraqis killed or found dead. Within Baghdad, the attacks mostly targeted Shiites. A mortar attack killed 11 people in Dora, 5 people killed by a suicide bomber on a public bus that was headed to the Shiite neighborhood of Karada. Here's Robert Reed for the Associated Press in Baghdad.
A string of early morning bombings has rattled the Baghdad area as insurgents step up their attacks despite the Baghdad security crackdown. The blasts included a suicide bombing on a public bus, a roadside bomb against a police patrol, and another bomb in a commercial area just south of the city. All the targets were in Shiite areas.
It's Robert Reed reporting for the Associated Press. Two more bombs in the southeastern Shiite neighborhood of Zafrania killed 8 people today, 20 people found executed on the streets of Baghdad. Outside of Baghdad today, there were some particularly spectacularly awful incidents. In addition to that brazen attack on the U.S. base at Tarmia, north of Baghdad, that I talked about last hour, Mark Santora of the New York Times today reports that a family of 13 was slaughtered on the highway. 13 people, all from the same family. On the highway, the road between Baghdad and Fallujah, they were about 12 miles outside Baghdad. Witnesses say they were killed because they were members of a tribe that joined an alliance against Sunni militants and al-Qaeda in Anbar province. The head of that anti-Al-Qaeda alliance had his house attacked today as well. 5 of his guards were killed. He survived. In Ramadi, a major in the Iraqi army had his home attacked today as well. Another 5 people were killed in that attack. A car bomb in Ramadi killed at least 9 people at a police checkpoint. And in Duluya, which is north of Baghdad, at least 4 people were killed by a car bomb. Near Kirkuk, 3 Iraqi police officers today were killed on patrol. Just an awful day. Condoleezza Rice made a surprise trip to Baghdad on Saturday. She met with Iraqi officials and gave a speech to State Department employees and some U.S. soldiers in one of Saddam's ornate former palaces that we're apparently now using as our embassy. You know, even if you hated Saddam, could you imagine how much you would hate some other country coming over and setting up their embassy in your government buildings? Even if you hated the guy, you know? Anyway, she addressed in part the U.S. allegation that the Quds Force of Iran's Revolutionary Guard was funneling weapons into Iraq. She said even if the Iranian government isn't directing that flow of weapons, even if the Quds Force is freelancing and doing it on their own, the Iranian government should be held to account for it. U.S. officials today stepped up the accusations, this time accusing Iranian boats of approaching Iraqi offshore oil terminals in the Persian Gulf. I commend to you an article in the current issue of Newsweek that's about the Iranian military and this Quds Force. Today, I called the Baghdad-based reporter for that Newsweek story. His name is Babak Degonpishe. He's the Middle East correspondent for Newsweek. I called him in Baghdad, and I asked him if he can tell from Baghdad whether there's anything new in these accusations from the U.S. or whether the timing is just more political than anything else.
I don't really feel that this is particularly new information. We've been hearing these sorts of allegations from senior American military officials going back for at least 2 years. And the difficulty is there really is, you know, no clear-cut, open-and-shut case on all of this. And I think that's why these allegations resurfaced time and again, particularly now that there, I guess, is a question that, you know, whether there's any political motivations behind raising these charges up at this particular time.
That's Newsweek's Babak Degonpishe, who's speaking with me from Baghdad today. Iran launched its largest national war games in almost a year today, showing off the military might of 60,000 of its soldiers in ground maneuvers. Justin Rood used to write for Talking Points Memo Muckraker website, which is a great website, and he's now writing for the investigative unit at ABC News, which I think is a very good, lucky thing for ABC. He's very good. Justin Rood pointed out last week that now that we know that Jim Gibbons, the governor of Nevada, is being investigated for corruption when he was a Republican congressman, that brings the total number of members of Congress from the last Congress, from the 109th Congress, the total number of members of Congress being federally investigated is 21. Wow. Duke Cunningham, Bob Nade, Jim Gibbons, on down, 21 members of Congress from the same Congress. The vast majority, of course, Republicans, but there is still the ongoing investigation into William Jefferson, Democrat, still the subject of an ongoing federal bribery investigation related to a telecom deal in Africa. He was kicked off the Ways and Means Committee last June because of that investigation, but now there is news that Nancy Pelosi plans to give William Jefferson another committee assignment. Even though the investigation to him is ongoing, Jefferson is getting a seat, apparently, on the Homeland Security Committee. Generally, I feel like Nancy Pelosi's done okay as House Speaker so far. This one, I think, bad move. If he's innocent, that will come out in the investigation. Then you can make him king for all I care. But while the investigation is still active, do not put him on the Homeland Security Committee. Just don't. Bad move. You ready for today's spooky story? Denver International Airport investigators trying to figure out why 13 airplane windshields have cracked. Plane windshields are super tough. They're rated to withstand air pressure like 400 knots. They're supposed to be able to survive hitting a bird in flight when they're going wicked fast and all of those things. The FAA says in the past 25 years, there have only been 20 in-flight windshield cracks known for American aircraft. Now there are 13 planes all at one airport, all with cracked windshields. Spooky. Finally, do you remember that movie that came out in the mid-80s, The Fly, with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis?
Those weird hairs that were growing out of your back, I had them analyzed. But they were definitely not human. No!
You're afraid to be destroyed and recreated, aren't you?
Oh, no. A fly got into the transmitter pod with me that first time when I was alone. Don't go back to it. Could be contagious.
Okay, The Fly came out when I was 12, and for some reason it had a long-lasting effect on me. It may have had something to do with the fact that I kind of liked Gina Davis, and I thought Jeff Goldblum was so homely that he gave me hope as a homely 12-year-old that someday, too, I could make Gina Davis like me, or I could get turned into an insect accidentally through insect-contaminated time traveling. Anyway, if The Fly had any effect on you in the mid-80s, did you ever think, you know, what The Fly really needs is more singing? Well, your prayers have been answered. The Fly is being done as an opera at the Théâtre du Châtelet in Paris. Placido Domingo supposedly going to be conducting. Though I find that hard to believe. That was in the not-joking news story about this. The Fly, the opera. Those are my top stories this hour. But for sports, Daytona and Mr. Wayne Newton, here's Kent Jones.
Thanks, Rachel. Gina Davis, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Anyway, in NASCAR, the Super Bowl of stock car racing, the Daytona 500 came to a frantic finish yesterday.
Kyle Busch spins, Matt Kenseth spins, but here comes the race to the Daytona 500 victory. At the stripe, Kevin Harvick gets it by inches, comes out of nowhere, and Kevin Harvick is the 2007 Daytona 500 winner.
Harvick nosed out Mark Martin to take the checkered flag by just 0.02 of a second. For the 48-year-old Martin, who was making his 23rd attempt at a Daytona win, the second-place finish was his best ever. Meanwhile, pre-race favorites Tony Stewart, Jimmy Johnson, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. all left the race after collisions. Learn this sentence to impress your red state friends. Nothing against Harvick, but I sure wanted Martin to win that thing. That old boy's earned it. Just learn it and use it. In golf, Charles Howell III made three clutch par putts in a playoff against Phil Mickelson to win the Nissan Open in Los Angeles yesterday. Phil, as they said in Glengarry Glen Ross, always be closing. In basketball.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to fabulous Las Vegas. Usually our home is the entertainment capital of the world, but today, with the 56th NBA All-Star Game, this is the basketball capital of the world.
That was Siegfried of Roy and Roy fame introducing yesterday's NBA All-Star Game in fabulous Las Vegas. In the game, which was a distant afterthought with all the hoopla, the West, Danny Gans, the East, 153-132. Kobe Bryant had 31 points for the West and was named MVP. Before the game, showgirls escorted Wayne Newton out onto the stage.
She's gonna set my soul on fire. I got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn.
After the Eastern Conference team was introduced, Wayne played guitar and fiddle during a rendition of James Brown's I Feel Good under a strobe light, followed by his signature Donkashade. Siegfried and Roy, showgirls, Wayne Newton. If anyone can think of why Vegas should not get an NBA franchise like tomorrow, let me know. Rachel?
Wow.
Big
That's
show.
Very impressive. And to give it to Siegfried or Roy, whichever
that
one was.
That was Siegfried, I believe.
Siegfried, who can't even say the word basketball.
Basketball.
Very impressive. 17 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Today's front page story, the big story of the day, the disaster that is Walter Reed. Coming up next.
Have a question for Rachel Maddow? Call us at 212-871-8173 or email us from maddowonline.com. Air America Radio.
Have you heard of a child that was in a terrible accident?
Whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the three blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it. extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon, and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is. Riding on the bus with poor people. New rule. Call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. We're in the middle of the road. If you always drive on the left shoulder.
Welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Thanks for joining us on this fine President's Day. It's the Rachel Maddow Show here. We're happy to have you. Now it's time to wade into the old mainstream to see if there's any gold worth panning for among today's top stories.
Eureka!
The Rachel Maddow Show front page story today is about the huge story about Walter Reed and the way we are treating wounded veterans.
My job is to protect our troops.
Dana Priest and Ann Hull from the Washington Post essentially went undercover at Walter Reed Army Medical Center for months. I don't know how they represented themselves to the people they talked to, but they never got permission from the hierarchy at Walter Reed, but they did do months of reporting there among the soldiers sent home wounded from Iraq and Afghanistan. Walter Reed has a reputation for being a stellar, first-rate inpatient facility, but there are hundreds of wounded troops, some of them there for years at a time, in outpatient facilities that I almost, even with all I believe about this government and how bad a job it's doing at governing, I almost can't believe this is what we're doing to our wounded troops. I'm just going to read you a quote here. Behind the door of Army Specialist Jeremy Duncan's room, part of the wall is torn and hangs in the air, weighted down with black mold. When the wounded combat engineer stands in his shower and looks up, he can see the bathtub on the floor above through a rotted hole. The entire building, constructed between the world wars, often smells like a greasy carryout. Signs of neglect are everywhere. Mouse droppings, belly-up cockroaches, stained carpets, cheap mattresses. This is the world of Building 18, not the kind of place where Duncan expected to recover when he was evacuated to Walter Reed Army Medical Center from Iraq last February with a broken neck and a shredded left ear, nearly dead from blood loss.
I intend to do something about it. And I've asked our commander to do something about it, and we're going to protect our troops.
Quote, on the worst days, soldiers say they feel like they are living in a chapter of Catch-22. The wounded manage other wounded. Soldiers dealing with psychological disorders of their own have been put in charge of others at risk of suicide. Disengaged clerks, unqualified platoon sergeants, and overworked case managers fumble with simple needs, feeding soldiers' families who are close to poverty, replacing a uniform ripped off by medics in the desert sand, or helping a brain-damaged soldier remember his next appointment.
We know they're there, and we're going to protect our troops.
Quote, one case manager was so disgusted, she bought roach bombs for the rooms. Mouse traps are handed out. It doesn't help that soldiers there subsist on carry-out food because the hospital cafeteria is such a hike on cold nights. They make do with microwaves and hot plates.
We will continue to protect our troops.
Quote, Sergeant David Thomas, a gunner with the Tennessee National Guard, spent his first 3 months at Walter Reed with no decent clothes. Medics in Samara had cut off his uniform. Heavily drugged, missing one leg, and suffering from traumatic brain injury, David, age 42, was finally told by a physical therapist to go to a Red Cross office, where he was given a T-shirt and sweatpants. He was awarded a Purple Heart, but had no underwear. David tangled with Walter Reed's image machine when he wanted to attend a ceremony for a fellow amputee, a Mexican national who was being granted U.S. citizenship by President Bush. A caseworker quizzed him about what he would wear. It was summer, so David said shorts. The case manager said the media would be there, and shorts were not advisable because the amputees would be seated in the front row.
My job is to protect our troops.
These are all quotes from the Washington Post series yesterday and today on Walter Reed. Walter Reed Army Medical Center, as I say, thought of as being the jewel in the crown of the medical system in the U.S. military in terms of its inpatient care. But the scandal of how outpatients are being treated, hundreds of outpatients, is spelled out in these two lengthy stories from Dana Priest and from Ann Hull at the Washington Post, and it's blood chilling. It's also not the only airing of the national disgrace that is the way that we're treating our wounded veterans right now. The Army Times paper also has a pretty incredible article out today, a real shot across the bow about disability, about what it takes for members of the military who have been wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan to actually get in line to find out what their disability assessment is going to be, which affects not only their ability to get medical coverage from the VA, but also for their families. We're going to be talking about Walter Reed, talking about the Army Times article, and how on earth we can live with this kind of disgrace as a country. Next, with Paul Rykoff of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. This is The Rachel Maddow Show.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
If you know a child, if you have a child.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your ass. All right, new rule. No more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number.
I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
Single mom in the...
New rule. Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Now, in the Air America Anchor Chair, the host of the Rachel Maddow Show, Rachel Maddow.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. This is the Rachel Maddow Show here on Air America Radio. Early Sunday morning, a U.S. military Chinook helicopter crashed in Zabul province in southeastern Afghanistan. The Taliban immediately claimed responsibility for shooting down that helicopter, but the U.S. says the crash was due to some sort of mechanical problem. Here's Marine Major William Mitchell from Bagram.
It was a transportation mission, just shuttling between two locations in eastern Afghanistan. The pilot did radio that there were some engine problems.
Eight U.S. service members were killed in that crash. More than a dozen were injured. It's the deadliest single incident this year for the U.S.-led coalition and NATO forces in Afghanistan. In Italy, tens of thousands of people rallied on Saturday in the small Italian city of Vicenza, protesting the planned expansion of an American military base there. The expansion would essentially double the size of the base to house the full 173rd Airborne Brigade. That would increase the number of military personnel stationed there to about 4,500. Residents of the Vicenza area say they are concerned about traffic congestion, environmental damage, and the possibility of terrorist attacks against the base. But the rally on Saturday was also billed as a chance for Italians to express their frustration over American foreign policy. Local officials said they were afraid that the demonstration would turn violent. Hundreds of police officers stood guard and helicopters hovered overhead, but the march took place without incident. Honda announced today that the odometers of 6 million of their cars actually click off mileage too quickly. The company is notifying owners and giving them warranty extensions and, in some cases, payments. Because, of course, a too-fast odometer would make your warranty expire faster than it should and would bring down your resale value for when you want to sell the car. All of this is the result of a class-action lawsuit. The lawyer who's heading it is James Holmes of Henderson, Texas, and he says he suspects that odometers are sometimes deliberately set fast to help automakers trim warranty costs. That's an accusation that the car companies vigorously deny. Mr. Holmes says he's now aiming at Nissan, alleging that their Altima sedans back to 2002 roll up miles 2.5% to 3% too fast. And finally, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has pledged not to pick a favorite Democratic presidential candidate, but his son has other ideas. Rory Reid, son of Harry Harry Reid. Rory is signing on as Nevada chair for Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's presidential campaign. He'll also be senior advisor on Western issues, including public lands, transportation, resources and conservation, growth and affordable housing. Rory Reid currently serves as the chairman of the Clark County Commission. That's Las Vegas's county. He's a past chairman of the Nevada State Democratic Party. The announcement prompted his father, Harry Reid, to release a statement reminding us all that Harry Reid is still neutral on the question of Democratic presidential candidates. Those are some of the stories we're keeping an eye on today. Whenever I read reports about American soldiers injured in Iraq being flown home, being picked up at Andrews Air Force Base and brought to the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, I've always felt a certain sense of relief in that, you know, for as long as they're at Walter Reed, of course, they'll get the care that they deserve. Well, in two articles in the Washington Post this weekend, reporters Dana Priest and Ann Hull put paid to that assumption. They describe extraordinary bureaucracy and filth, cockroach and mouse-infested rooms, incredible neglect for Walter Reed outpatients. Joining us to give us his reaction to this reporting is Paul Rykoff. Paul is the executive director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Paul, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Rachel. Thanks.
Do you feel like the country and the media are finally clicking into what you guys have been saying for years now?
Finally.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been nice to have it sooner, but these stories about what's going on inside Walter Reed, especially about the bureaucracy, are things we've been hearing about for years. A good friend of mine had his right arm blown off, both of his legs shattered by a grenade, and when he was out processing from Walter Reed, which is kind of like a college campus, he told me stories of walking through the snow with two messed up legs, carrying his paperwork from one building to another just so he could discharge. So these stories have been out there for some time, and I'm glad the Washington Post is on top of it and people are finally finding out.
Do you think that, am I right in the impression that Walter Reed has kind of a sterling reputation in terms of its inpatient care, and it's maybe just what we didn't know about outpatients there?
It is, and I think that's about right. I mean, the inpatient care is generally very good, and this article specifically focuses on about the 700 soldiers, Marines, and other military folks that are in the outpatient basis, and specifically Building 18, which is the one they write about with the moldy walls and the broken elevator. And I think the bottom line here is that, like many other aspects of the war, they didn't properly plan, and there aren't enough paper pushers, there aren't enough caseworkers, there aren't enough therapists at Walter Reed to take care of this influx of vets that are coming home with injuries.
The head of Walter Reed, Army Major General George Waitman, was made available to reporters yesterday in advance, or the day before yesterday, on Saturday, in advance of this series coming out in the Washington Post. They must have known how bad it was going to be, that it was going to be that full spread that it was in the Sunday paper. And he says that the staff responsible for tracking patients after they receive treatment, in other words, the staff responsible for making sure that soldiers aren't lost and are followed up on after they've had their medical treatment, the outpatient guys, says the staff responsible for them were just overwhelmed by the number of wounded, that they had no idea there were going to be so many people wounded. And I just feel like, you know what, that can't possibly be the explanation, A, because you're talking about something that, you know, violence spiking 2 years ago and you haven't caught up since, but B, why didn't you yell help?
That's the exactly right question to ask. This general should have been raising flags and projecting where the demand was going to be. This is no secret. I mean, people know that folks are coming home wounded. With the surge now coming up, there are going to be more folks wounded. Over 1.6 million people have been through Iraq and Afghanistan since 9/11. Over 25,000 wounded. You don't need a crystal ball to understand that your demand is going to go up at Walter Reed. So this guy needs to answer some very tough questions. And at the higher levels, if they haven't planned, why not?
Yeah.
You know, this is not something that they shouldn't have foreseen. I mean, everybody knows that this is going to happen. And you know what's really insulting, Rachel, is that it hasn't stopped here. I mean, the president's new budget actually cuts the VA, the Veterans Affairs budget for 2009 and 2010. They've actually cut prosthetics research. They're projecting a decline in mental health patients for 2008. These guys have no ability to correctly and accurately project numbers. They can't be trusted to get the numbers right.
If the war ended right now, the VA medical costs for dealing with people injured in Iraq and Afghanistan would be higher in 2009 and 2010 than they are now. I mean, with healthcare inflation the way it is, and with the accumulative effects of some of the things that are happening, particularly the mental health stuff, I mean, that's just absolutely, we've reported on that, I'm glad to say, and it's not a surprise to hear it because we've talked about it and it's obscene, but it is amazing that it takes the kinds of horror stories, literally cockroaches and mice and molds on the front page of the Washington Post on a Sunday in order to make it a national scandal.
Well, at least it is. I mean, I give your show credit for bringing attention to it and other shows that are finally picking up on this. But, you know, we've all got to remember that this isn't going to go away. You know, this is one story that's out there, but it's one of many. We haven't even gotten into the VAs. This, remember, is Walter Reed, the crown jewel.
Yeah.
So imagine what it's like in your local VA, and imagine what it's going to be like in your local VA in the coming years. And you know, this is at the same time where the president has just imposed new fees and copays. They want to charge people to use the VA. They want to double the amount that veterans pay for prescriptions. And in the president's quest to try to balance the budget, he's trying to do it on the backs of veterans. And we and other groups are going to push back strongly to make sure he doesn't do it.
Haven't some of those copays already been instituted as well? It's not just proposed, but some stuff has already happened, right?
Well, not yet. I mean, these are going to go through, it would be for the 08 budget.
Yeah.
And it would specifically affect, you know, it was going to be based off for your income. So higher income veterans were going to be paying more. But the prescription copay would happen, you know, immediately with this new budget. And what it really does is it's designed to force thousands of veterans out of the VA healthcare system.
Yeah.
And it's designed to lower the amount of money they have to spend on VA.
Yeah.
So, you know, we just came back from Washington. We made the rounds in Congress, and we're going to push real hard to make sure that this doesn't happen and that stuff like what's going on in Walter Reed right now doesn't happen. And also that somebody was held accountable, because somebody needs to be fired over this.
Yeah.
I'm tired of this, oh, shucks, we didn't know. We need to hold somebody accountable here.
You know, there's also the story that's in the Army Times this weekend that was also published yesterday that I think probably would have been almost as big a story had this Washington Post story not broken at the same time, but about disability ratings, about how soldiers are being kind of systematically downgraded in their disability ratings so that their families can't get benefits, so that they don't get automatic disability, so that they don't get some of the payments that they might expect from having catastrophic injuries and disabilities in theater. That kind of stuff, Paul, you're one of the most politically savvy people I know. I feel like the idea of disability ratings and outpatient neglect at places like Walter Reed and the waiting lists and the co-payments and all of this stuff, it's horrendous when you know what it is, and it's horrendous when you see somebody go through it or when you're somebody who has to deal with it. It's really hard to talk about politically without people's eyes glazing over. It's like talking about healthcare reform. It can be the most important civil justice issue in our country, but there's something about the language around it that doesn't sound patriotic and tough, and so people don't have patience for making politics out of it.
No, you're right. It's kind of like going through tax code. I mean, it's not exciting stuff. It doesn't make headlines. But, you know, we have members all over the country, and this has affected a lot of my friends. So one of the things we try to do at IAVA is put a human face on these policies. That Army Times story was great because it shows that the VA basically tries to nickel and dime our veterans.
Mm-hmm.
What the veterans do is they tell you, okay, here, take this claim right now. Take a 15% disability rating, and you get the money now instead of fighting for the 30% that you might deserve but might take a year to get.
Yeah.
And if you're an enlisted soldier, you've got a few kids, and you're trying to put food on the table, you're going to take the money now that you know you can get. And then that's another way of pushing people out, you know, really not honoring their service and also saving costs. It comes down to money. And the president's going to try harder and harder in the next year to balance the budget, and this is not the way to do it. No way.
It would be one thing if they would make a political argument for paring back on veterans' health services. You know, have you ever heard a politician stand up and say, you know what, VA medical care has gotten really expensive, and the veterans, you know, we care a lot about them, but frankly, they're getting a little greedy with their health care needs, and they're asking for too much, and especially all this mental health care BS. Really, we're going to cut it because these guys ought to be tougher. I mean, if you heard somebody stood up and make that argument so you know where to address your next punch, that'd be one thing, but it never gets argued about. It just happens with no announcement, and you only find out about it years later once people are already feeling the pain.
Yeah, well, there are other arguments here, too. I mean, this ties into the national debate about socialized health care.
Yeah.
I mean, the VA system is the most viable, most efficient, most effective model we have for health care in America. And if we can put this out in front and say, hey, this is a way that works, I think it really does open up a can of worms for the larger debate about health care in this country. And that was something I really wasn't aware of until I made the rounds in Washington, and older veterans groups leaders pulled me on the side and said, you know, there's much more here than just taking care of our veterans. This is about the larger health care. Healthcare fight.
Which, of course, leads to the conspiracy that maybe they're trying to muck it up so badly that it doesn't look like a model anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, the electronic record-keeping system, for example, is a model. It's the best in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the prosthetics research is fantastic. The rehab that they do is excellent. But, you know, the VA and the Department of Defense don't always talk to each other, and they're two bureaucracies running in different directions. And at the end of the day, this is about the bureaucratic, mind-numbing red tape that people have to go through. It just shouldn't be this hard.
No, it's not about that. It's about a lack of leadership and a lack of competence in the people who are duty-bound to provide this service. You know, it's not just about, like, oh,
this is the inevitable result of government trying to do something. This is about bad government with no leadership failing the people who we can least afford to fail. And it's inexcusable. And no other government in the world would get away with this without people knowing about it and not being in the streets about it. And we're like, oh, healthcare, boring. And well, it steams me.
No, I mean, we've gotten a ton of calls at our office already today, and people's blood, is boiling around the country. We're going to push back on this, and this is part of a larger fight. You know, I encourage people to go to our website, go to IAVA.org, find out how you can support some legislation and how you can push back. You know, the president needs to take action on this. He needs to address it in a press conference this week. The Secretary of the Army needs to address it this week, and if everybody around the country in the grassroots really starts turning up the heat and calling their congressmen and senators, then maybe we'll see some movement here.
Paul Reich, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel. Take care.
Paul Reichoff, Executive Director of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. They're at IAVA.org. Paul's a regular guest and my pal, and I'm so mad about this. You know, Bob Gates, if he wants me to stop calling him the new Donald Rumsfeld, which is what he is, the new defense secretary, you know what he ought to do? He ought to move his office into Building 18 at Walter Reed. Move his office into the mold-drenched, mouse-infested, roach-infested, no food, no bureaucratic relief, pit of misery that we're dumping our Iraq and Afghanistan wounded veterans into. Bob Gates ought to move into the worst room in Building 18 and not leave until this business is cleaned up. It's a national disgrace. It's the Rachel Maddow Show.
Want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
And now, the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
The Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio.
Have you heard of a child that was in terrible...
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cache Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cache Fever Jackpot hits, a Cache Club player wins just for playing with their card. Plus, you can check the Cache Fever Jackpot total and your Cache Club points online now at CacheCreek.com. So join Cache Club today and get the fever. Cache Creek Casino Resort.
The Rachel Maddow Show. It's
almost 53 minutes
past the hour. Now it's Kent Jones Now with Kent Jones Now.
Hello, Dateline New Orleans. 1 million tourists, plus legendary Catholic pagan bacchanal, plus rivers of alcohol, plus inadequate public toilets equals Mardi Gras. It also equals, ew. Lack of facilities means revelers have been forced to let the good times roll wherever they happen to be. Those giant parade displays they throw the beads from aren't called floats or nothing. According to a spokesperson, the city of New Orleans provides 228 portable toilets, including 58 in the French Quarter and 86 in the Central Business District. Okay, that'll be enough for my friends. The rest of you, SOL. Local institutions have had to get into the act. At the Academy of the Sacred Heart, a Catholic school on the Uptown Parade route, the Father's Club sells food, daiquiri, beers, and soft drinks to raise money during the parades. It also maintains banks of portable toilets. Quote, it's a real public service, said Liz Manthe, director of development for the school. They're cleaned every day. There's a place to wash your hands. Believe me, people are very happy to find it. The school has 20 portable toilets. It's $1 for a single trip and $5 for unlimited use. The money raised has been used to buy playground equipment and other school expenses. So, hey, get hammered, pay to use the toilets, buy some kids a jungle gym. You got to love those faith-based initiatives. This is Kat Jones for the Rachel Maddow Show on Air America Radio. Vigilance.
I'm stuck on the unlimited access option.
Yeah. Yeah.
That does that mean that you can stay in it once for as long as you want? Or does that mean...
I don't know if there's an attendant timing you.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I think they're... Time, yeah, that would become an issue.
When I lived in San Francisco after college, there was a lot of controversy around this effort to put in fancy French public toilets on city streets in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they were controversial is not because we were getting fancy French public toilets, but because the way they stayed fancy is that after you are in the toilet for a certain amount of time, it assumed that you had left and flipped the floor upside down and washed itself.
Okay. So, okay. Yeah.
I remember nobody being all that confident. They kept assuring us, you know, there's no way that you could just linger a little too long and get flipped into toilet netherland and washed.
It's a machine.
It's a machine. But yeah, there was a lot of consternation over that possibility. So just think about that unlimited use thing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know how they work that.
I have a pet story for you, Kent.
Monkey gruh.
Monkey. When I went to do the CNN yesterday morning,
yes.
I went to the Springfield, Massachusetts affiliate local TV station, WWLP, and they kind of satellited me in from there. And
yes.
The guy who was due to help me, his name was Ben. And
all
Ben
right.
Hooked me up and gave me the earpiece and the microphone and all those things. And as I was going to leave, he said, I'm very embarrassed to say this, but my wife is a big fan. And she said to say, monkey. And I said, vigilance! You had no idea what I was talking about. Anyway, today's pet story. Apparently, there was a fight among ex-astronauts about the best way to walk on the moon.
Really?
Yes. Apparently, the astronauts on the last time, the last lunar walking mission, right, the last manned mission to the moon, I think was the Apollo 17,
mm-hmm.
maybe? And they were taught to lope. That was the technique they were taught.
Right.
Two of the men who walked on the moon on that last mission said they did not like the lopping. They preferred loping. They preferred the bunny hop. Another guy who was on that mission says neither the bunny hop nor the lope was good. The astronauts need intensive cross-country skiing lessons.
Yes.
Because the best way to get around on the moon's surface is by fake cross-country skiing.
It's like the electric glide.
Yes.
On the moon.
But
the hustle.
They've
the
released
bus stop.
Tapes of them fighting about it on the moon.
Boy, when you do this and you go down slope, that first step is a long one.
It's talking about, I'm doing the bunny hop. Listen to this.
This is the best way for me to travel, uphill or downhill. What's that? Like this? Two-legged hop?
Like this?
There seems, yeah. And on level ground, I can skip. I don't like that loping thing. Oh, the loping's the only way to go. See, when I'm on level ground, I can skip. But this two-legged thing is great. Man, I can cover ground like a kangaroo. Oh. Okay.
Just purely an
Jewish people have to start... The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to... Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320. You're listening to AM 1320 KCTC.
Sacramento.
Sacramento's left channel. Because you deserve the truth.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. One suicide bomber, two more American military deaths. It happened near Baghdad. Here's CBS News correspondent Lara Logan.
The target was an Iraqi police station that U.S. soldiers use as a base in the town of Tamir, a violent Sunni Arab stronghold about 25 miles north of Baghdad. In this coordinated attack, insurgents fired automatic weapons and rocket-propelled grenades, while a suicide bomber forced a truck full of explosives through the front gate of the base and blew himself up.
17 Americans were hurt in that attack, and another roadside bomb killed three U.S. soldiers today. Nine have died in combat since Saturday. Three climbers who spent last night stranded on Mount Hood are on their way to the hospital after being rescued and brought down this afternoon. The rescuers said the three did everything right to make saving them easier. This is the sixth day since the start of JetBlue's Valentine's meltdown. The carrier canceled about a quarter of all its flights for the second straight day, including everything in and out of Columbus, Ohio.
We don't fly that much, but, you know, we want to get where we're going as scheduled without any hassles. And I know there was a lot of weather issues all over the country, but it just seemed like a big leadership issue with JetBlue more than anything.
The carrier hopes to fly all or most of its schedule tomorrow. You've heard it before, eat your fruit and vegetables. Now the American Heart Association says women who do that can cut the risk of heart disease and stroke, maybe even a little bit more if they added an aspirin a day. CBS News medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook.
Women are at risk and men are at risk. The point of this study was it looked at women because in the past, a lot of the studies have only looked at men. And so there's been really a shortage of information about how do we prevent heart disease and stroke in women. Now, in the last decade or so, we've really had some good studies that focus on women, and we're getting finally some good recommendations.
Hindsight is often 20/20 in suicide cases, but CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports that doctors keep working on suicide prevention.
Could it someday be possible to do a test to determine whether someone is prone to commit suicide? In a study of family members, Johns Hopkins researchers have traced suicide tendencies to a certain genetic area. They say this is the third study to find such a link. Now that researchers have found the neighborhood, they'll try to pinpoint the exact suicide gene and develop ways to identify people who face a higher risk. This new study appears in Biological Psychiatry.
A lot of ads like this on the airwaves.
Wouldn't it be great to hear exactly what you want on radio?
Now Sirius and competitor XM want to merge. Leslie Stimson, the news editor at Radio World Magazine, says it could be a tough sell to the FCC.
XM and Sirius may want to merge. I think they would have a hard time convincing the commission that it's necessary. I think they'd have to say, look, one of us is going to declare bankruptcy before the FCC would even consider changing the rules.
This is CBS News.
Some things are pretty easy, like getting some sun in Florida or finding a cheesesteak in Philadelphia. Well, at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels, it's almost that easy to earn a quick $50. This spring, all it takes is four nights to earn a $50 room credit with the Easy Choice Rewards program. Pretty easy, right? Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com for our best internet rate guarantee. We'll see you there.
Earn 2 stamps per night for qualifying stays between 2-1 and 4:30-07. Maximum 10 stamps per stay. For program and guarantee details, visit choicehotels.com.
Okay. Ooh, 17-inch aluminum wheels. All-new Chrysler Sebring Touring, standard. Toyota Camry LE, not available. Honda Accord LX, not available. Yes, essential stain-resistant fabric. Sebring, standard. Other guys, not available. There's got to be something, huh? Steering wheel, Sebring, standard. Toyota and Honda, standard.
The all-new Chrysler Sebring, completely redesigned inside and out with many exclusive features. As described, $21,110. MSRP excludes tax.
University of Minnesota researchers say teenagers are spending too much time sitting still. Here's WCCO's Steve Murphy.
Dr. Melissa Nelson says the study looked at the lifestyles of 2,000 adolescents over a five-year period.
We're seeing really dramatic decreases in physical activity through this period. But what we're also seeing to complement that is increases in sedentary behavior over time.
The biggest factor, the computer. Among girls in mid to late adolescence, time spent on the computer for recreation rose from 9 hours a week to 12 and a half hours. The study links the increase in sedentary lifestyles and decrease in physical activity to a higher risk for obesity. Steve Murphy, CBS News, Minneapolis.
She was born prematurely, weighing in at just under 10 ounces, a height of 9.5 inches. But now doctors say a baby girl that spent less time in the womb than any other surviving infant, just 22 weeks, will be released from a Miami hospital tomorrow. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
What could be the big
sunny day with tonight's AccuTerra forecast?
And folks, wasn't it just a perfect day for a terror alert? Bone chilling in the morning, clear and present danger in the afternoon, tapering off into cold sweats at night. Tomorrow, AccuTerra is predicting 100% chance of a really big terror alert to take our mind off bad economic news. An Al-Qaeda cell coming down from Canada into here, the Great Lakes regions, the folks in the Detroit and Saginaw. You might want to put on that extra layer of Kevlar. Our exclusive AccuTerra radar is picking up a lot of chatter out here in the Denver area. So stay away from chemical plants, nuclear facilities, and, of course, the French fries at Arby's. Here in the West, some light showers of ammonium nitrate, a little sarin gas are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's terror. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Politically Direct with David Bender. David's guest tonight is Gore Vidal.
I would live like a free man, shake the chains from my soul. Change my direction to heal my reflection. Stepping out into the glow. These are the things I would do to help me break through. Yeah, these are the things I would do.
And welcome to the program. I'm delighted that joining us again today is America's greatest man of letters and one of her greatest historians, Gore Vidal. Welcome back to Politically Direct.
Always nice to be politically correct, even if incorrectly so.
Well, it's actually, in this case, we call it politically direct, and you are always direct. And so let me actually start by asking you quite directly. You were, in 1982... a candidate for the United States Senate. Suppose you had won, and you are now serving what would be your fifth term in the United States Senate. You have an opportunity now, as I'll go you one better, you're chair of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate. Poor Joe Biden, he's gone.
Good.
What would you do on a practical basis as a man not only of history, but as a man of politics, understanding the politics of this, and the Senate seems hamstrung to deal with this war in Iraq. What would you do, Mr. Chairman, to bring about an end to this war in Iraq?
I'd hold hearings, since I am the majority, as you put it, chairman, and let the Republicans play what games they want, but we will flood them out. I'd hold hearings on what possessed and essentially unelected, but selected by the Supreme Court president, to arbitrarily declare war where he had no power to do so, on, in essence, two foreign countries that had done us no harm, could do us no harm. One was Afghanistan and the other was Iraq. I have never been so stunned in my life to hear that little monkey trotting along saying, I'm wartime president, I'm wartime president. Well, he's not one. And I would say the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate, or indeed any senator, should point out to him, you cannot be a wartime president, no matter how much you want to be one, and have all sorts of extra powers handed you, without a war. I would say that was the sine qua non, if I may lapse into my original Latin. So, it would be holding the hearings, Mr. Bush, who is now out of office, according to your fantasy here, I would summon him under oath.
Has that ever happened? Has a president ever been required to testify under oath about policy?
I think so, yeah. They got Reagan on Iran-Contra.
Right. I think they videotaped him, didn't they? Yes.
Yeah, but yeah. He was testifying.
Right.
He was under oath.
Indeed.
And he kept saying, I don't remember, which gave rise to the Alzheimer's maneuver, which later saved him a lot of trouble because he was in trouble. The country didn't like it, and what he had done, he had broken the law in a major way by dealing with Iran, enemy nation. Of course, we have so many enemies now.
And many of those same people who were part of those dealings are now dictating our foreign policy and are helping to implement some of the same things 20 years later.
Yes, the neocons are the most visible of the group. At the moment, they're lying a bit low, but they will be back. So I would first say, let's clear up some past business. We've gone to war against a war of aggression started by our president, and we lost it. We've lost the one-time brilliance of our military forces. They have been, I believe the phrase, stretched too wide. This has been a total disaster for the United States. And as chairman of this committee, I want to find out who's responsible, ascribe blame, and possibly punishment.
If the gentleman will yield for a moment, my question would be, as a matter of practical fact, because what we hear from this administration is that one can look backward as much as you wish, but we are here now. We have broken it. And to pull out will lead to ethnic cleansing, tens of thousands of people, a greater number by far than are dying every day now, would die if we withdrew quickly.
I don't believe a word of that. That's invented, too. Now, to say we're in the midst of it and we can't draw back, well, we also said that to the victims of Katrina. Yeah, you lost your city. Well, tee-hee. It was a bunch of bums anyway. That is the attitude of the U.S. government toward one of the few good cities in the United States, New Orleans. Well, that's our usual thing. Remember, the United States always acts in bad faith. That is the first law of our Constitution, the implicit law of it, starting with the Indians. And I can take you around and around and around American history. It is always bad faith, lying, cheating. And somebody's making money. And a lot of people are making money. Think of those Pentagon billions, perhaps trillions by now, that Halliburton has got off with. And one company after another who didn't even have to bid because they were friends of our wartime president. So they got their contracts, really, without bidding.
The wartime president without a war. Well, in the House, Henry Waxman have already begun hearings into those no-bid contracts and are looking to see where that trail leads. One thing I heard you say very specifically is there needs to be punishment. Is the need for punishment both for accountability and to change the policy, or really to send a message to the rest of the world as well that we are holding our government accountable for this kind of unconstitutional behavior?
Don't worry too much about the rest of the world. They've written us off. We have no reputation.
Irretrievably, you think?
Nothing is irretrievable. Perhaps one day we'll be remembered as the inventors of Mickey Mouse, you know, and Coca-Cola.
No, that's something to look forward to.
Well, I think it's arrived.
That's why Walt Disney is frozen, so that he can live long enough to see that. As
yes, and probably is directing events from that ice cube he lives in.
We're talking with Gore Vidal. We need to take a quick break. This is Politically Direct on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. Your own personal Internet. That is you and me. You and me. Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth. AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Presents Politically Direct with David Bender.
Well, we've been talking about our policy in Iraq, if one can call it a policy. It seems to have been a series of accidents that no one will take responsibility for. There's a lot of finger pointing now. Don Rumsfeld got the axe right after the election, and somehow that the administration tried to say, well, see, we've heard you. We understand what needed to be done. You said shortly before the election that you were beginning to see, have a sense that the tide might be turning and that you were beginning to be optimistic for the first time in a long time. Democrats have been in power now for 6 weeks. How do you see it? Is there cause for optimism?
Well, yes. Better that they have an official majority in both houses of the legislature.
Were you surprised by that, by the way?
No. That's why I was optimistic. I get around the country quite a lot.
You spoke for a number of candidates and...
Oh, yeah, and I raised money for the Democratic Party. It was very clear to me that this was going to be a Democratic sweep.
The House seemed clear, but the Senate... Remember when we did election night in Air America, that those last couple of races, Montana and Virginia, Jim Webb, who we just had on this program last week, that was a surprise to a lot of people.
It wasn't to me, but I was brought up in Virginia. And they have a tradition, and it's just a quaint one, but they like the idea of statesmen. Allen was, you know, kind of a clown, and serious people didn't take him seriously, and the Virginians, the ones who bother about politics, are pretty serious. After all, they did start the country, and I think it was the first five or six presidents. It was known as the Virginia Junta, starting with George Washington and going down through James Monroe.
At least there's a tradition of juntas.
Well, the juntistas. And I always add the dreaded Woodrow Wilson, one of the worst presidents we've ever had. He was from Virginia, though he pretended he was from New Jersey. Or Princeton. No, I saw the Democrats were going to win it. But since the entire, all the Senate Democrats are all running for president, and the ones in the House are quite used to being an unheeded chorus to the national debate, but that can change.
What do you think? Harry Reid called this the greatest foreign policy blunder in the history of the country over the weekend. Yet we're seeing only non-binding resolutions, a non-binding resolution out of the House, nothing able to even be debated. They can't get to 60 votes in the Senate. Is this what the people voted for?
No, but the people's will is never enacted in the United States. We're too busy acting in bad faith about everything, foreign affairs, domestic affairs, repairing the damages of Katrina. Whatever we do is a lie, generally. And it's a scam. And I don't know why anybody's ever surprised when I mention these things, because every American knows it. How many times has each of us lived through these things? I suppose you can shut your eyes and, you know, sing God Bless America 20 times a day, but that is not going to help matters.
I need to ask you, however, where your cause for even a flicker of optimism was, given that it's your view that everything will be based on bad faith. Where is their cause for optimism?
Well, there's some very interesting new people in the House of Representatives. That's a place to look. And they will be the new generation. And they will move on to the Senate and so forth.
Are there people that you would point out, single out, that we should be watching?
Well, Dennis Kucinich. And there are people in, you know, in the Senate, too. Senator Leahy, it's very nice to see him in a place of authority.
He's been chafing at the bit to use that gavel to do very much what you've described, to hold these people accountable.
So I think a lot will be going on. You have to factor in our situation. We are broke as a nation. There is no money left. They just kill the beast. They whisper to each other, which means the Republic. They don't like the Republic. The Republican Party is the party of anti-Americanism. And I equate America with the Republic and the Constitution, which stands for our will, documented, and, as it were, the skeleton of the Republic and the three great powers, legislative, judiciary, and executive. The executive has got to be brought under total control. I've been thinking lately that we should have a recall, as they do in California with get rid of governors they don't like.
A national recall.
Yeah. But you could recall these idiots that have seized control through spending money and all kinds of unnatural things. For those who want to know how they did it, read John Conyers, a congressman from Michigan. His book called What Happened his report on Ohio in the year 2004, how the election was stolen for Bush.
I believe you wrote the preface to that.
And I wrote the preface to that. So I'm quite aware of its contents. Something has got to be done. And I think the most culpable person, visible one, is, of course, Bush himself and Cheney. But back of them, there's a whole bunch of shadowy dealers.
In the House, Nancy Pelosi has said that impeachment is off the table. Do you think there should be articles of impeachment filed right now?
Of course there should. And she's a fool for saying that. In fact, she better get on that table, because the country will not survive. Perhaps even the 2 years that are left in this administration. One's got to get rid of them. And the best way is a trial in the Senate. By what right did you declare war on Iraq? How did you do that? You have an attorney general who supposedly seems to know no law at all. Gonzalez is one of the stupidest figures that we've ever had in that office.
And but he's been Bush's lawyer for years, which may be well, ipso facto.
All the more reason for another impeachment.
But you made reference to the fact that this is not a declared war. It is, however, true, and a subject of great consternation to people now running for president who voted in 2002 to authorize the use of force in Iraq, that this president has wrapped himself in that authority and said that the Congress did give him the authority to go find weapons of mass destruction and protect us from the threat of Saddam.
Well, to start at the beginning, Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11. Everyone knows that. Even the little man knows that. He said so, to everyone's surprise, not so long ago, that Saddam had nothing to do with 9/11. That's why we were busy hanging him, you know. We were hanging him for fun, bad faith. That's how we deal. He'd worked for us when we were having our problems with Iraq, with Iran. And he'd worked with us very nicely, and he's a servant of the United States. I'm talking about Saddam Hussein.
Absolutely. We've seen the pictures of
him,
Donald Rumsfeld. Yes.
Yes, yes. Highly edifying.
But those resolutions are what Bush is still using to justify his actions.
But they are totally dishonest, like everything else in this government. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. So Bush asks for troops, money, then extra money, more troops, to fight Saddam Hussein. Because we don't fight him over there. We got to fight him over here. Well, for sheer bad faith, and, you know, this, they hold the American people in great stupidity. I mean, they think the American people, I speak of the Republican political class, as being a bunch of dopes. And I must say, there's a good deal of proof that the American people, as represented by their media, as reflected by their media, seem to buy anything they're told. It's astonishing. The truth interests no one. None of this mess could have ever happened had we had an honest media. But we don't.
I want to talk to you about the media. We're talking with Gore Vidal on Politically Direct. This is David Bender. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Girlfriend in a coma.
Have you ever heard of a child that was in a terrible accident?
Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime. And no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8. Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
You'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready, new rule number one. Enough with gaysploitation TV. Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Hey, if I want a bunch of gay men in queenie outfits telling me how to live my life, I'll go back to Mass.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Nothing pumps me up more than when fans tell me I love the King.
Number 23!
This is Kevin Martin from the Sacramento Kings. Metro PCS loves the Kings, and I'm a fan of Metro PCS. For just $45 a month, I can talk and text all I want, and there's no contract. If you live, work, and play in Northern California, get permission to speak freely to Metro PCS. Tell them Kevin sent you.
Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance coverage in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included. Certain restrictions apply. See store for details.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking. As in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent budget and rent like a genius.
New rule. Stop whining about gas prices. It's good that it costs a lot, and not just because the sales tax will help pay for our twice-a-year governor elections. It's also good if it makes you think of walking the 3 blocks from your house to Del Taco instead of taking the Land Cruiser. Gasoline costs a lot because we have to find it, bribe or kill the people who live on top of it, extract it, refine it, ship it, and pump it. You'll pay $2 a gallon and you'll like it because you know what the alternative is, riding on the bus with poor people. New rule, call things what they are. If your morning coffee contains crushed ice, whipped cream, and caramel, it's a milkshake.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Politically direct. Direct. Here's David Bender on Air America Radio.
We're back. We're speaking with Gore Vidal, and before the break, we were talking about the media, and it's funny you bring up the media. I noted that it's February sweeps, and I think you once said about Truman Capote that his death was a good career move.
I think it was. You know, he had run out of lies.
But with Anna Nicole Smith, I'm interested not at all in speaking about her, but I'm fascinated by the fact that, yet again, you talked before the break about the American people have proved often that the contempt that the Republicans have for their intelligence is deserved. And the fact that somehow the media can, at a time we're debating the future of our American foreign policy, of this war, where people are dying on a daily basis, all we see is wall-to-wall Anna Nicole Smith.
Well, that's the first law of every dictatorship. When you're worried about being overthrown, and I'm sure there are a lot of Republican strategy meetings going on, people, older members of the party, genuinely disturbed at suddenly how unpopular they're going to be when they realize that we've lost several thousand men and so many wounded and so many trillions of dollars. There are some of them who worry that they may get angry at us and figure out we did it for our own private ends. And that we, through the media, which we own it. We don't fight them over there. We're going to have to fight them here. Now, that is one of the stupidest remarks ever made by perhaps the stupidest man ever to hold a presidency. How are they going to get over here? What will be their motivation to come over here? To steal the Lincoln Memorial? I mean, to go through the White House and look for silver?
Based on the actions of those 19 people 5 years ago, the level of fear that has been injected into this debate and into everyone's waking moments, it's as if people are literally walking on eggshells every day waiting for another attack. That's what they've done to us. And Roosevelt was right, plainly, that the greatest fear would be fear. And Bush has...
These people generate it every single day. And every now and then they shift it, you know. Suddenly, as relief, they give us, you know, foul flu from Asia.
Another kind of fear.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Another fear. And luckily, the weather is on their side, you know. We're getting lots of hurricanes. So they play upon our fears. The same media would be telling the truth about these things. If I owned a newspaper, I'd print it every single day. Because you can't rely on the memories of anybody. Saddam Hussein and Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. If you want to bomb somebody, you'll have to start with Saudi Arabia. But we can't do that because they're great friends of the Bush family. And they've paid off just about every major figure in our political life. And the major players, they own the media.
You know, you talk about if you owned a newspaper, you would print this every day. Do you think people want to know the truth? Isn't there some sort of disconnect that the more information people have about 9/11, about Saddam Hussein, about Saudi Arabia, the less they want to hear because it's difficult to wrap their minds around it?
I think it may have come to this, but I don't think people are like that, no. I used to, in my serious days as a politician, I was talking to parents, mothers, and so on. I used to complain about the educational system, which is the worst in the advanced world, first world, American public educational system. It's ghastly. And the result is people don't know anything and have learned nothing in their time in school, which is largely holding operation. I'd get an extraordinary response when I would say, these would be mostly parents, I have never met a boring 6-year-old, and I've never met an interesting 16-year-old. You can explain the glands are kicking in and so on. So they are. But I said, what happens between 6 and 16? There's 10 years in which they've been made stupid and dull and totally lacking in curiosity, without which you cannot have education.
And I'm betting the eyes of these mothers just lit up because they recognized it.
Oh, I'll say they did. I didn't have to speak after that. They all testified.
Is this part and parcel, is the fact that our education system has deteriorated to the point that it has, part of that same bad faith? Is this a desire to keep Americans less informed, less knowledgeable, more pliant?
Yes. And it's worked.
I was afraid that would be a simple yes. We're talking with Gore Vidal about, well, everything. And we're going to take one more break. This is Politically Direct on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
This garden that I've built for you, they're just sitting now and here. I will never leave it there. I could not bear to return and find it all untended. For the trees all bended low. This garden is a
home. Here's your chance to be part of miracle.
Theaters. Please, you're not a cardiologist on call. You're a putz whose babysitter wants to know where the ketchup is. And then you tell her in the middle of the movie. Sometimes it's so loud in the theater I can barely hear what the black people are yelling at the screen. There is a simple solution. Put your cell phone on vibrate and then up your... New rule, no more celebrating gastric bypass. Carney Wilson, Al Roker, and now Star Jones are all being heralded by the media for stapling their stomachs shut. They shouldn't be. They're not making a brave choice to change. They're giving money to doctors to reroute their ability to turn food into crap.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Jumbo shrimp. It only really makes sense when you taste it. Politically Direct with David Bender on Air America Radio.
And we're back. We're talking with Gore Vidal about our government, our politics, our nation. And I've noted with interest that a recent poll that was taken suggests that a majority of Americans, and in fact a significant percentage of Republicans, wish that this presidency had ended in November of 2006. It bore out everything you've pointed out, that these last 2 years can be extremely dangerous. But I think it also speaks to why this campaign for the 2008 election is in full swing. People are in such denial that there are two more years to go that they are trying, if they could have the vote today, they would. But that brings me to asking you about this election. It's considered to be a fairly talented field compared to previous years. I'd love your take on it. What do you think of, there are three presumed front runners right now. Let's start with the top of that list, Hillary Clinton.
Well, if, you know, we suddenly woke up tomorrow and she had overnight somehow mysteriously become president, I'd be quite satisfied. She's very intelligent. No, she hasn't handled the war issue particularly well. But, you know, she's at least being accountable for herself and not, you know, taking the Fifth Amendment to pretend she wasn't in the Senate that day when she allegedly came out in favor of the war. People know what they know at the time, and she keeps saying, you can't do over. Time moves on.
Have you met her?
Yeah, I quite like her. She's very, very intelligent. She's supposed to have said they were going through, when she was about to run for Senate in New York, they were going through groups, see how popular she was with this group and that group. And they found that she was most unpopular with middle-aged white men. She was stunned. I mean, she said, what on earth have I done? Somebody said to her, because you remind them of their first wife.
When and what do you do about that? How do you focus group that?
At least she's got a great sense of humor about it.
I've also met her, and I met her when she was in the White House. And I have to say, one-on-one, she's one of the most engaging people you could ever meet. The problem seems to be that this is a problem that was said to be true of Al Gore, that the qualities that they might exhibit interpersonally don't come through television. And that could be a problem, or is suggested it will be a problem for her as this campaign goes forward, that she just doesn't play well through mass media.
I don't think that's going to decide the election at all. She could come through like Ilsa Koch, and with all the money she's raised, she's still going to win it. I don't think.
So you think it's inevitable? You think this is, she has
probably
the nomination?
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you then about the other two presumed frontrunners right now, still less than a year before the first vote. Barack Obama.
Well, I think he's very pretty, but I have no idea what he stands for. And I'm always well advised. I'm a great fan of the Black Caucus. And I'm always impressed in these matters by their opinions. And several of the leaders in Congress of the Black Caucus say, no way are they going to vote for him. They're going to vote for Hillary. Well, the Clintons have done for their group, if you can call it that, quite well. But it's more than that. It's a gut instinct they have. And they are suspicious. I'm more suspicious of the fact he hasn't said anything of any value.
What I find interesting, he's talking about transformational politics. He's talking about the idea that we have to change our politics and take them out of the level of sort of the petty discourse that we've had and try and elevate it. There's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a policy agenda.
No, it's a dream. So he too has a dream like Martin Luther King. But if that's his dream, he better dream harder and on bigger issues than cleaning up our politics. It's too late for that. We are committed to one of the worst political systems in the world, which ensures not only mediocrity, but downright evil. Being able, through big money, to grab offices for oneself and one's friends. Heck of a job, Brownie. Well, we're surrounded by Brownies now. People of no competence who have been given important jobs.
And how about the vice presidential nominee in the last cycle, former Senator John Edwards, who's been talking about a lot of issues, including economic inequality. He's talking about poverty in America, which people don't hear a lot about.
Well, all that is to the good. I mean, he's developed relevantly. I mean, what he talks about is relevant to our situation as a nation divided between the rich and the poor, with very few bridges in between. So I think he's just speaking of where he stands the tallest and the most useful. Whether that is electable, I am no prophet.
What about the Republicans? They seem to be in disarray.
Any party that thinks Giuliani is anything but a windbag is, you know, in real trouble.
And he's pulled it sharply ahead of John McCain. I mean, he's about 40%.
McCain is a windbag. So,
so if it's a windbag versus a windbag, then
yeah, but
I'm paraphrasing Truman here. It's you get a windbag.
Well, he's sort of a sinister windbag, Mr. Giuliani. the war he declared on black folk when he was mayor of New York will never be forgotten.
It's funny how the media has conveniently forgotten it in
the media has the same feeling, but they don't dare express it. That's why we call them media.
Bad faith.
Bad faith.
Others in the Republican field, Mitt Romney, of course, announced this past week, and you well remember his father, George, brainwashed Romney.
Yes, I do.
Is Mitt Romney someone that this Republican Party could nominate?
Well, probably not, because nobody knows him. He's made no impression. And in the next couple of years, I don't see how he can. He's not very adventurous. And what does he represent? And he's also allowed himself to be tied into a knot on religion. It's always a mistake. Because we have, you know, this is a country full of bigots. And there are people who hate Mormons without even knowing what a Mormon is. So to put himself on the defensive, you see, Jack Kennedy did it very slyly. Much of the country was Catholic. Much of the voters were Catholic. The bishops all hated Jack. And I made a remark to him during the election. I said, well, your Catholic base is not doing very well for you. And because Cardinal Spellman had just come out against him. And Jack said, well, I don't have the cardinals, but I have the sisters. And that's a majority.
And Kennedy was able to sort of pivot and turn his independence into an asset and turned his, in effect, turned his Catholicism into an asset. I wanted to read this to you because Gallup just did a poll. And Gallup, still polling after all these years. But here we are, as of just a week ago, asked if your party nominated a well-qualified candidate for the White House in 2008 who was fill-in-the-blank, would you vote for that person? Catholic, it's now 95% say yes, 4% say no. Black, 94% say yes, 5% say no. And we know historically, we here in California know with Tom Bradley, those numbers are never quite what people tell pollsters. But still, 94% is much higher than it is polled in, say, a generation ago. Jewish, 92%. A woman, 88%. Hispanic, 87%. Mormon, 72% say yes, 24% say no. So even assuming that people are trying to be politically correct, he starts off with a quarter of the electorate saying, no way they'll vote for a Mormon. Interestingly, just finishing the list, married for a third time, 67% say yes, 30% say no. And so there you have Rudy Giuliani.
Down he goes.
And Newt Gingrich. You start adding up the total of wives in the Republican Party, and it's just ex-wives, actually. 72 years old, as John McCain would be on Election Day, 57% say yes, 42% say no. And I don't think he's calculated that quite as much. He keeps citing his 96-year-old mother as proof that, and that she's still driving. It's proof that he'll be around. The last two, a homosexual, 55% of Americans in 2007 say they would vote for a homosexual for president, 43% say no. I find remarkable. I remember the first time this was taken, I think it was 2% said they would. And below homosexual, can you guess what is even below homosexual?
No.
Atheist. 45% say yes, 53% say they would never vote for an atheist.
Oh, the country is sicker than I thought.
Well, those are the numbers. Let me, as we finish today, this is the week going in to the Academy Awards. And you have long been a student both of politics and of film, wrote a wonderful book called Screening History. As you look at these films, have you seen any of the nominated films?
Yes, I'm a member of the Academy. I just voted yesterday.
Can you give us an early prediction? What do you like?
Well, they ask us not to, but I'll be up front that I certainly thought the best film was The Queen.
Terrific movie.
Yeah. And not because it was about royalty and the beautiful Diana's troubles. It was about generations. And there is the Queen. She's out of another world. And a nobler one than the one we occupy. And that she occupies now, too. And there's a great moment in it when she's muttering about abdication, and she's talking to her prime minister, Mr. Blair. And she said, you know, people have changed. And then she sounds as if she might be ready to go and turn over to her son, to the delight of nobody. And then she sort of backs away from it. And he said, well, what keeps you? Oh, she said, my coronation oath. And she repeats it. She's there for life. And nothing can be changed when you've sworn that oath. I thought this was very good for contemporary folk to hear somebody of principle, acting upon principle, and taking seriously an oath.
Gore Vidal, who, if you never took an oath to our republic, it seems to me you've lived that oath, and we are always grateful to share your views and to have you join us. Thanks.
Thank you.
God save the Queen! The fascist regime! They made you a moron! Potential hate bomb! God save the Queen! She ain't a human being! There is no future! And England's dreaming! Down it's all of the ones you want, and it's all of the ones you need!
Prince Harry is going to hurt someone. Look at this kid. He's a thundering ball of rage. His mom's dead. His father dates rotted tree bark. His brother gets to be king, and he's destined to spend the rest of his life being photographed doing nothing. Arrest him before he kills a woman. New rule. Country music stars can't be authors. Charlie Daniels' new book, Ain't No Rag, Freedom, Family, and the Flag. It's a collection of musings by noted white trash icon Charlie Daniels on subjects ranging from American flags to American flag bumper stickers to what to do to a hippie if you catch him trying to burn your flag. Before this book, I was ambivalent on the issue of flag burning. Now I find myself reconsidering the question of book burning.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Listening to AM 1320 KCTC, Sacramento's Left Channel. Left Channel. And streaming live at 1320leftchannel.com.
CBS News, I'm Peter King. Two Americans dead, 17 wounded after an attack on an army post near Baghdad.
This was a rare and brazen assault on a U.S. base, carried out in broad daylight.
CBS News correspondent Lara Logan says a suicide car bomb was followed by gunfire at a former Iraqi police station.
It is unusual because insurgents typically favor hit-and-run ambushes, and they usually avoid the kind of heavy firepower you would expect at a fortified U.S. base. But it does make sense that now, with so much of the U.S. effort concentrated on the streets of the capital, that they would look for targets of opportunity outside of Baghdad.
The attack brings the total to
9 American military deaths since Saturday. CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod reports that Al-Qaeda once again seems to be gaining momentum.
It's a resilient organization, and I think what we're seeing now is their ability to adapt.
CBS News consultant John Brennan used to run the National Counterterrorism Center.
Zawahiri probably is having some operational engagement with a number of his lieutenants and commanders, so it is a worrisome development.
Even President Bush acknowledges the Al-Qaeda comeback. The
Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighters do hide in remote regions of Pakistan. This is wild country.
The initial confidence was partly based on a deal Pakistan's President Musharraf had cut with tribal chiefs to police the border that's been ineffective.
Three climbers who spent last night stranded on Mount Hood are headed to the hospital for a night after being rescued and brought down this afternoon. Their rescue team said the three did everything right, says CBS News correspondent Jennifer Miller.
Not only did they have that experience, but they also had a mountain locator unit on them. It's an electronic device that allowed rescuers to pinpoint the climbers' exact location in helping to find them. The climbers also made some good decisions. They overnighted. The three of them slept together by joining two sleeping bags. They put a tarp over them, and then they had the black lab sleep over them, keeping them warm throughout the night.
Big change in the radio landscape.
Listen large, only on XM Satellite Radio.
Over 130 channels of Sirius Satellite Radio.
Competitors XM and Sirius say they plan to merge after huge costs and shrinking stock prices. The FCC may have other ideas, though. The commission's already said that one satellite radio company and no competition is a bad idea. Some new advice for women hoping to avoid stroke and heart disease. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive has more.
The new guidelines are from the American Heart Association for the first time urging all women to ask their doctors if taking a daily low-dose aspirin would be a good idea to ward off possible heart attacks. The advice also calls for exercise every day and consuming less fat. The association's journal called Circulation says many more women than previously thought are at risk of heart disease and stroke. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
JetBlue says it'll unveil what it calls new initiatives tomorrow, nearly a week after a Valentine's meltdown it's still trying to recover from. This is CBS News.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox, unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. The American Heart Association says one way to promote a healthy heart is to eat a diet naturally rich in antioxidants. So where can you find them? Well, did you know Welch's 100% grape juice contains powerful antioxidants, much like the grapes used to make red wine? In fact, one independent study just ranked Welch's 100% grape juice the number one beverage for antioxidant capacity per serving among 1,000 foods tested. It may be the tastiest way to help protect your heart. I made the switch to Welch's 100% grape juice. No added sugar, unmistakably delicious taste. I'm Charles Osgood. See you on the Osgood File.
President Bush celebrates President's Day by visiting the home of the first American president. CBS News White House correspondent Mark Noller.
Though many of us call this President's Day, under federal law, it remains Washington's birthday. And to commemorate this year's 275th anniversary of that event, President Bush paid a visit to Washington's Mount Vernon estate.
I feel right at home here. After all, this is the home of the first George W.
And it sounded like Mr. Bush was using Washington's fight for freedom to defend his policy in Iraq, declaring that today, America is fighting a new war to defend our liberty, our people, and our way of life. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Russia says Iran is behind in payments for a Russian-built nuclear power plant that's supposed to be online in September. A Russian official says Iran blames the delay on the switch from dollars to euros. Iran says it's paid up. I'm Peter King, CBS News.
You're going to need a
new rule. Jewish people have to start. The Jewish population in America dropped 5% in the last decade, which may explain why this country's finances have gone to. Breed, you sons of Abraham, breed! We need you. Israel needs you. Kobe Bryant, Robert Blake, and Phil Spector need you. Without Jews, who's going to write all those sitcoms about blacks and Hispanics? New rule. Living in a box for 6 weeks doesn't make you a magician, it makes you homeless.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's time for EcoTalk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Hello and welcome to EcoTalk. I promise you another full hour of programming reflecting the full spectrum of life with a decidedly green tint point of view, as we do have here at EcoTalk, from preserving the sanctity of life and all life forms to the greenerati gathered at Sundance this week to greener burials. Throw in a hydrogen BMW, which we test drove today, and you've got today's show. I don't want to waste any more time. I want to jump right into our first interview because we're going to speak to someone I've been wanting to have on the program for the last 3 years since we've been doing this program on Air America nationally. He is Richard Cizik. He's the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Association of Evangelicals. He's a very busy man, which is why we haven't been able to schedule him yet. But last week, they heralded the formation of a coalition of 28 leading evangelical Christians and scientists coming together for something called the Evangelical Climate Change Initiative. The coalition was the brainchild of Cizik's and Dr. Eric Chivian of Harvard University. Welcome to the program. I hope I've pronounced all those names correctly.
Oh, you did beautifully, Betsy. My pleasure to be with you.
And tell us, what has been the outcome of this announcement and what has been the feedback? I imagine there's a lot of excitement.
I think there's a lot of surprise, first of all. Most people can't believe it, but it's happened, and it's been in the works a number of months, going back to last summer when Eric Chivian and E.O. Wilson and I got together at the Cosmos Club here in Washington and shook hands. Together with the plan to lead theologians and scientists behind a statement that would say, hey, we believe the science, we believe that this is a moral imperative, and we've together got to work on it in such a fashion as to bring people into the movement who have heretofore not been convinced of climate change, not been convinced of their responsibility to take creation care seriously. So after much planning and even some prayer, we've had this happen, and we're just delighted with the results.
You were one of those individuals who didn't believe until an event in 2002. Just briefly tell our audience about that eco-epiphany.
Sure. Well, it happened in 2002. I was invited to the Oxford Climate Initiative meeting, and as it implies, Oxford, England, and had said to myself, well, I don't need to get involved in this. Look, there are debates here about the science of climate change. This isn't something I need to put my time or the NAE's name and efforts into. Well, I heard the facts from reputable, what I call statured scientists for the first time, and decided there was no way, Betsy, I could walk away from this and do nothing. It just was impossible. It wasn't just the science. It was the biblical mandate to be a steward of creation. So coming away with that kind of, you call it epiphany, I've sometimes called it a conversion of sorts. So I decided to get our movement on the right ground here on this subject, and I think we've seen considerable movement since.
Maybe a revelation of sorts. There's
yeah.
a great quote among many that I want to read here from you. If coal-burning utility plants emit nitrous oxides, mercury, which is then transmitted into our rivers and lakes, ingested by fish, eaten by pregnant women who then pass it along to their unborn children and babies, then isn't that a sanctity of life issue?
Absolutely. And the critics on the right who have said, well, I've gone green or gone liberal or something, they're crazy. I'm simply going biblical. So I'm doing what the Bible should have been had me doing all along, but which I was deluded, and in part because media has reported the climate issue. Well, it would be like somebody giving equal time to saying, as some people do, that man didn't go to the moon. 1969. Didn't walk on them. There are actually people who believe this is a hoax.
Or the Holocaust didn't happen.
Or the Holocaust didn't happen. In other words, they give equal time in the media. They shouldn't be doing that. If there are 5%, 2%, 3%, 1%, or even less than that in this country who still believe that climate change is a hoax, well, we don't give them equal time in the media. But I had given them equal time in my mind until I got what I believe was the best science in the world, combined with Sir John Houghton, knighted by the Queen for his efforts with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, saw it all clearly and for the first time decided to do my best to bring my evangelical colleagues into this. Well, the fact that E.O. Wilson chose in his book Creation to say, I just think it's supremely logical, he wrote in his book, that we could get together on middle ground, neutral ground, and that's exactly what we did. People who don't agree on the cause or the nature of creation, in other words, whether it evolved over time or came into being instantly, whatever the case may be, we have a duty together to save a habitat from destruction, to save this planet from climate change that has irreversible effects on species extinction and the like.
And so regardless of how we got here, which we can't change at this point anyway, we can discuss it and debate it till kingdom come, but
exactly.
We have an obligation, all of us, to protect the future
and
for children.
The marks, the evidence of unmistakable, even irreversible changes are already occurring with a speed up, an intensity that I hadn't even predicted a few years would happen. Some of the things that have happened since I came to the light, so to speak, on this issue in the Antarctic and the Arctic are just alarming.
And don't feel bad because the scientists are also alarmed. You know,
they are.
They could not have foreseen
some things
it.
Like the Larsen L shelf that just disappeared in the Antarctic. They didn't expect to discover in the Arctic that, well, it's lost 40% of its ice density, I think is the exact figure, nor the fact that it's losing, that you have a period of land the size of, 10 times the size of the state of Maine that's disappeared in the last few decades. 10 times the size of the state of Maine that's disappeared.
Glaciers in Greenland are melting as we speak. We're, of course, cheering you on every step of the way since you saw the green light, but what are the conversations like within your organization since you came out on this issue?
Ooh, well, even since last week's event, there are those who suggest I'm out there by myself. Nothing could be further from the truth. Joel Hunter, one of the megachurch pastors who was on the panel with me the other day, is on our executive committee. The NAE believes and endorsed this dialogue. Let there be no mistake about this. But there are people out here who want to tamper with the facts, even about the evangelicals, as much as they want to dispute the climate change that's occurring, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are these people out there who are simply looking backward, not forward. They don't want to accept this for whatever reasons. I don't know whether it's because they want to support the president. I don't know whether it's because they simply have sort of a visceral action.
What are they so afraid of?
Science has said, I don't know fully.
The funny thing is, what are they so afraid of? I mean, there is something to fear and there's something to get into action about, but why does the truth scare them so much, you know, when in fact it is scary, but, you know, they've kind of got a reverse approach.
I think they do have it backwards, and the Bible does say, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And so I think we're free to act in a sense that, look, this isn't or shouldn't be one party concern, shouldn't be the Democratic Party's
religion.
It's not a red state, green state, or even a blue state issue. It's a moral issue that everybody ought to be able to decide we have to do our utmost to change. And I think if we together, those on the left and the right, the religious and the secular, the Republicans and the Democrats, together come behind this issue, we can make America again a leader. But we're not a leader today.
The technology is there, but we have to take it. We have to take it to the next level and embrace this. Do you see this as inevitably coming in the next year or two? That there's just this groundswell now of awareness about climate change with Al Gore's movie, with you know, mainstream magazines covering it on their cover.
Yep. Yeah. Oh well, absolutely, and we're going to make sure that happens. We have our own movie, by the way. It's called The Great Warming, and it was produced by Stonehaven Productions, funded by Environment Canada and Swiss Re, and it's a beautiful movie. It's called The Great Warming. You can find it at www.thegreatwarming.com. We're going to be announcing an agreement here in the next month with the Energy Star program of the EPA to make sure our churches, which, there are 350,000 houses of worship in this country, synagogues, mosques, churches, all of them should be leading the way, not not just following.
Well, we are cheering you on again. Bless you, and go far, go wide, go loud. Richard Cizik, the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the National Association of Evangelicals. We're just so glad that you're doing this work, because I think you have opened a lot of eyes.
Oh, thank you, Betsy. God bless you.
When we come back, NRDC's Daniel Heinerfeld speaks with Kevin Bacon from the Sundance Film Festival, where there's a decidedly green tint this year.
New rule, one dear to my heart. Lap dancing is a First Amendment right. The L.A. City Council this week banned lap dancing. What is next? Burning books? Lap dancers, or Imagineers, as I like to call them, are artists drawing you into their fantasy world, much like a skilled novelist does. If novelists had perfectly waxed bikini lines. But more importantly, lap dancers are expressing an idea called hope. The hope that someday a skinny young woman with artificial breasts and a navel piercing will want to have sex with you. And without that hope, millions of American men might just as well throw themselves into the sea.
Laughing at the truth. AM 1320.
At Cache Creek Casino Resort, win fast, win often with Cash Fever Jackpot. Jackpots start at $20,000 and are guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Every time a Cash Fever Jackpot hits, a Cash Club player wins.
Switch to Metro PCS and pay by the month, not by the minute. $40 a month, all the local and long-distance calls you can make anytime. And no contract. Call 888-8-METRO-8, Metro PCS.
Hello.
Permission to speak freely. Long distance in the continental U.S. Taxes and fees not included.
Betsy, it's really great to be here. This town is hopping. Thousands of people going to movies, to parties. They're spilling off the sidewalk and clogging the streets. It's a little bit crazy, but fun. The main reason I'm here is for the Film Your Issue International Film Contest for 16 to 26-year-olds. It's a fantastic contest that was started a couple of years ago by a guy named Heathcliff Rothman. And what we did yesterday was there was a big party to introduce the new contest and to show the movies that won in last year's contest. It was a lot of fun, and at the party I caught up with Kevin Bacon.
Well, you know, you look at my generation, and there's times when we kind of hang our heads in shame with the world that I'm leaving, you know, my children, both environmentally and in terms of wars and politics. And I think that part of the problem sometimes is that, you know, myself, I didn't do enough when I was younger. I had sort of a moment of activism during the Vietnam Wars. I was a real little kid. And then I sort of got very self-involved and got involved in my own self and my own career and then sort of putting myself first. And then you turn around and you look back and you see a situation, you know, when we were talking about global warming and climate change in the 70s and nobody was really willing to take it seriously. And you think to yourself, oh, did I do enough? Did I fight hard enough? And did I give enough of myself? So I think it's important to encourage people who are young to, you know, get on board. And it's not too late. You have to live with hope, and you have to get involved, even in a small way.
A lot of people look at problems like global warming and some of these other massive problems, and they give up hope. What can I do? But there are actually things, and I'm just wondering how you deal with that in your own life. I mean,
well, I think it's really important, certainly with environment and climate change, to not get too overwhelmed and to start small. and to say, okay, you know, maybe I'll change a light bulb in my house, you know, and make it a fluorescent instead of an incandescent. You know, maybe I'll walk 10 blocks instead of, you know, jumping on the bus. Maybe I'll think about the packaging that I'm using, and I'll think about, you know, what I do with that packaging and how much I need it. I mean, it's really important to realize that if you make little steps, you're making little steps in the right direction. And once you start to make those steps, you start to feel better about yourself as a rider on this globe, and you start to feel better about the future. It is in your power, and it's important to try not to get too overwhelmed.
And does it feel to you like there's an awareness now that's really gathering momentum about these issues?
I think there's more of an awareness, and unfortunately the awareness comes from worse and worse news, you know. And I think that one of the problems, I believe, with climate change is that most people have been told their whole lives that hurricanes and big snowstorms and flooding is and drought is an act of God. So to actually get our heads around the fact that we're affecting it goes against the grain of, you know, thousands and thousands of years of indoctrination. And, you know, if there is a God, he would want us to, you know, get our shit together.
There are a bunch of other celebrities at this party, including Mandy Moore, who is beginning to do some work with NRDC to kind of reach a younger generation about environmental issues. Anyway, earlier in the day, I was with the Film Your Issue TV crew. We were going up and down Main Street in Park City just talking to folks on the street about what their issues were, what they were most concerned about. And what was really fascinating was that global warming just kept coming up again and again. So here's some of the tape.
Hi, I'm Christina.
I'm Erica. We're here from Chapman University visiting for the film festival.
And our issue...
Yeah, definitely global warming. I think that's a huge issue.
I'm from Sun Valley Ski Resort, and we've had, like, no snow this year either, so... It's been hard, and
I
don't know.
There's no snow here on the East Coast. I was just there, and it was, 60, 70 degrees when I was there, and people don't believe that it's happening, and that's surprising. It's shocking.
What do you think could be done about that?
New administration, first of all. I think a lot of more efforts need to be spent on being environmentally sound and getting new vehicles and... spending money on a hybrid anything. Little things can be done to help.
But nothing's going to be done, I don't think, until we really need to. Like, until gas prices are $5 a gallon, then people are finally going to start buying hybrids. So it's
sad.
How about your generation speaking up a little bit more?
That's really frustrating, too, because both Christina and I we read the news, we watch the news, we're politically active. I go to peace rallies, and it's frustrating because most people our age don't they don't know what's happening in our government.
Especially in college. College is not what I expected, because everyone's all about partying.
Yeah. It's a huge bubble, and that's really sad.
Yeah.
Can you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Tara Golden, and I'm the director of a film called Peace Walker. Well, you know, I was here at Sundance 2 years ago. I shot a film called Film Dreamers. In my opinion, I do like the lineup of the films more this year. I am seeing more films that have environmental issues. I'm seeing films that have a more positive spin on them, which is of interest to me. Yes, I have a lot of environmental concerns. Basically, that the planet's just getting raked over completely by the people on it right now. So, I mean, you pretty much can name an environmental concern. Clean air, clean water, murder of animals, it's all of concern to me.
What gives you hope about some of those environmental problems?
That's a great question. I guess I'm an optimist. Probably one of the things that gives me hope is my naivety. You know, I think maybe if I really knew the full extent of everything that's going on, maybe I wouldn't have any hope. But what gives me hope, we did this 1,000-mile peace walk, and if you listen to the news, sometimes you just hear about the worst in people, but we saw the best in people. And I saw people every day and met people every day that were beautiful and amazing. And so the connections that I'm making in the world right now are what give me hope, the people that I meet. And hopefully what I believe in is the next generation.
And there's still work to do on this generation. I haven't given up on them yet. Thank you so much for that report, Daniel Heinerfeld.
Thank you, Betsy.
Enjoy Sundance. We'll be back right after these messages.
Along with AM 1320.
Win fast, win often. The Cash Fever jackpot starts at $20,000 and guaranteed to hit by $30,000. Only at Cash Creek Casino Resort. And now you can check the growing jackpot anytime online at cashcreek.com.
Ammonium nitrate, it's a little sarin gas, are possible in the Los Angeles area, but don't expect loss of life. The Santa Anas are going to push all that nasty gunk out. Here's your 5-day. Yellow, bluish yellow, yellow again, yellow gradually becoming orange, and orange back into yellow. And we've got an orangish red weekend on tap, so be sure to have plenty of bottled water and canned goods on hand. And that's fair. All right, make it a great day.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
Think about this. Just a few years ago, you'd never have thought about buying a book, booking a hotel, or even buying an airline ticket online. Today, going online is the first place smart consumers look. LegalZoom.com has made it easy for smart, savvy consumers to be able to take care of common legal documents online. It's as simple as buying a book or securing your travel plans. You can form an LLC, last will and testament, or even register a trademark in minutes. LegalZoom.com saves most consumers up to 80% of the cost of going to an attorney. Yes, up to 80%. LegalZoom.com allows you to create common legal documents online at your own time and in the privacy of your home or office. Just answer some simple questions online, and LegalZoom.com takes care of the rest. For a limited time only, go to LegalZoom.com, and you'll receive a special discount by typing Talk Radio, all one word, in the box at checkout. Over a quarter of a million people and thousands more each day put their trust and confidence in LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Entrepreneurs, I've got your number. I know how much you put into your small business. Big dreams, big plans, and most of all, big thinking. Not your average run-of-the-mill thinking. You're all about big thinking, as in light bulb over the head, eureka screaming, think I'll open my own small business kind of thinking. The kind of thinking shown when you sign your company up for the budget business program from Budget Rent-A-Car. Now, I know what your knowledge-hungry mind is saying. Sounds interesting. Please tell me more. Will do. The Budget Business Program offers exclusive discounts and rebates to small businesses just like yours, including $2 back on every qualifying rental day. $2 back every day. You're the genius. Add it up. So, if you're a small business, visit budget.com/business and sign up for the Budget Business Program. Big thinking for small business.
Program subject to change. Terms and conditions apply. See budget.com/business for details.
Rent Budget and rent like a genius.
BMW Group. I'm Corporate Communications Manager here in the U.S.
We're standing in front of the Hydrogen 7, which we talked about a few months ago on the program. And where has it been since? They're excited about it, too.
Yeah, and it's not the Hydrogen 7 that makes this beautiful noise, but we should probably get something like this into the car as well. Yeah.
Well, this is something to signal America about. This is a brand new prototype. It's hydrogen. We're going to talk about how it actually works and how far, you know, we are from actually getting this out to the mainstream. But first, give us a little bit of history of this car and, you know, what state is it at right now?
You know, we started hydrogen research in the early 80s, actually, you know, when nobody was actually talking about global warming, but everybody was talking about the limitations of fossil fuel resources. That was an issue in those days as well. And also, our engineers found it fascinating that hydrogen is such an ideal fuel, actually, to be burned in an internal combustion engine. You know, simply getting petrol out or gasoline out and bringing hydrogen in as a fuel and using it in pretty much the same way as we used gasoline before. You know, just burning it with a spark and getting some power out of it.
Okay, and that was how long ago, and how did you get from there to here?
Now, that was some 25 years ago, and since then we were researching and developing this technology. We did, in total now, 5 generations of prototypes, and this is the 6th generation, and this is no longer a prototype, no longer a handmade concept car, but rather a production car that went through the complete series development process, and that means means we were actually putting the same effort in that car to produce it and to research it as we do with a normal 3, 5, or 6 series.
And this runs solely on hydrogen?
It can run solely on hydrogen, but it also can run on petrol. It is a bi-fuel car, taking into account the fact that the infrastructure for hydrogen filling stations is close to nothing at the moment, not only in the US, but also in Europe. But the idea of the car is actually to show that the hydrogen technology is feasible, it is there, and what we need to do now to implement that technology in an overall scheme is going for the infrastructure, generating a political will on the one hand, but also a consensus in society that hydrogen is the ultimate fuel, and then let's go for it. It's really worthwhile.
And we're going to go for it in just a moment for a test drive. Will we be running on hydrogen or petrol?
Well, you will be certainly running on hydrogen, but probably can switch just to make clear how easy and smooth that switch between the two fuels is. It's basically seamless.
So what's standing between this vehicle here outside the studio today and having them available to the mass market?
Well, what is missing, you mean?
What needs to happen between now and then?
On the one hand, we certainly need an infrastructure, and that means not only the filling stations, but also a clean way to produce hydrogen. We can produce hydrogen out of renewables. That is a very charming alternative, and it's probably the only alternative that makes sense. You could theoretically produce hydrogen out of natural gas or any other kind of fuel, but that doesn't make sense in terms of CO2 emissions and in terms of limited resources. So the only way to go is really producing hydrogen out of renewable sources. That is one thing. A clean production of hydrogen, but also then the distribution system.
Okay, we're looking under the hood here. This looks, I haven't seen the hood of too many BMWs, but looks pretty clean and normal. What is different about this? If I were a trained mechanic, what would stand out?
The storage system itself is the main difference between a conventional car and a hydrogen car.
And where do you store the hydrogen?
You store it in the boot area in a metal storage system that is more or less kind of a thermos can. It is liquid hydrogen, so that means it is deep cold. It's minus 418 Fahrenheit, and that is probably close to the absolute cryogenic point. Yeah.
So there's a freezer in this car?
No, there's no active cooling.
If it was a warm day, would that be a problem, or is it going to be safely cold for days?
It will be safely cold for days, but it will not be unlimited cold. After a while, when you're not using the car, you will have what we call a boil-off phenomena. So you will lose some of the hydrogen by evaporation, which is not a problem. We have a boil-off system that allows that to do. And on the other hand, if you use the car more or less daily, or frequently at least, then you will never lose any hydrogen through evaporation.
So your guess, it'll be how many years between now and when I could buy one, if I could afford one?
The main challenge remains really the production and the infrastructural side. And when you ask me when will it be the case that we have all these pieces together, the car, the infrastructure, and the production, it's hard to say. You won't hear from me in 10 years, 15 years, or 20 years. It depends really on the political will. It depends on people in the street asking for it. You know, that's something that probably your guys at the radio can contribute. And it depends on the mineral oil companies, the utilities, and so on, that we make it happen together, actually. That's the point. It's really what we need is a partnership of everybody who's involved in that.
Is it okay to talk about miles per gallon with hydrogen? Is that appropriate, or is there a different measurement?
It's a different measurement, actually. As you are measuring hydrogen rather in weight terms than in volumetric terms, gallon is a volumetric measurement, the tank has a capacity of 7.8 kilograms, and it offers you an autonomy of 125 miles, so you could say it is 14 pounds to 100 miles, and that is pretty far away from miles per gallon.
Okay, last question before we hop in the car. We had Dr. Joseph Roman last week. He's an energy expert, and he wrote a book called The Hype About Hydrogen. Perhaps mm-hmm. you're familiar with it. What is your message to him? Why is this not hype and maybe falsely getting the public excited about technology that's not really here yet?
You know, the idea behind hydrogen is obviously not to say that this technology is available straight away and right now. We are saying it's a marathon rather than a sprint. But what is behind the hydrogen idea is the awareness that we will need to find a way to get away from carbon fuels. And that is obvious for a number of reasons. I don't need to mention them here, I guess.
Not on our program, no. We'll talk about that day in, day out.
And one thing is certain, the switch between a fossil fuel economy and a hydrogen economy, the switch to a hydrogen economy will be a very, very big one. And we need to start now, and that's what we are doing, actually, and phase in that technology smoothly. You know, it's not a thing between one, today and tomorrow. It's a thing between now and, let's say, a couple of decades from now.
So you would say it's not hype, and it's not even about false hope. It's about starting somewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's start up the engine.
All right, to start the car is more or less a straightforward procedure. It's the same with this car as it is with the normal BMW 7 Series. You just push that start button. The car starts, and it will start always in the hydrogen mode. So whenever you start, it will start in the hydrogen mode, and then you are free to actually change the fuels by this button that we have here on the steering wheel that allows you to switch while driving between hydrogen and petrol. So off we go. So the car accelerates like a BMW. The sound of the engine is very similar to the sound of a petrol engine.
Quiet.
And you can probably hardly reckon that you're running on hydrogen now.
I don't feel any difference. Other than it's very cool to know that we are. And we're getting a lot of stares from people. So it's accelerating nicely. Feels like a normal car, except it's a BMW, so a little bit nicer than a normal car.
Well, it's, yeah, that's the idea behind it. We wanted to show that you can have a clean car that offers all the convenience that you are used to on the one hand, but delivers its performance in a way that has basically water vapor as an emission. Then
maybe you can start switching back and forth.
All right, so what I can do is just switch that button, and now we are in a petrol mode. That's it, and you can do it while driving as well. Now we are standing here at the traffic light, but it's also completely feasible when you're driving.
So that was it. You just push the button and you're back on petrol.
Yeah.
And is there an indicator, like how much you have in the tank, like you would for regular gasoline?
You've got an indication here for both gasoline, that's the bar here, down here, and then for hydrogen, that's the buff bar. You see, for hydrogen, the measurement is kilograms, whereas in petrol, it's liter or gallons, whatever you like.
And when you actually are filling up, give us a picture. Is it used with a hose, just like gasoline would be, or do you have some different contraption to get the hydrogen into the tank?
Well, basically, it's like filling up a natural gas car. It's
which I've never seen done, actually.
Okay.
Maybe some of our listeners haven't.
What you have kind of a hose, mm-hmm. and you put it into the filler. You close that system, and then you... Well, it takes about 7 to 8 minutes, actually, to fill up the car, so...
That's acceptable for driving a clean car,
yeah.
And there's nothing coming out of the tailpipe when you're in hydrogen mode, right?
Well,
except water vapor?
Virtually nothing but water vapor.
It's actually one over. Looks the same, but we're on Green Street, which is appropriate. You can make a left and then a left. We'll do that. And obviously there's a lot of different, not a lot of, but a few different ways to get hydrogen. Where does BMW's hydrogen come from, or what are you advocating as a source?
Well, you know...
I want to make a left at Green Street up here.
Okay.
Sorry.
At the moment, obviously, hydrogen is mainly produced out of natural gas.
Uh-huh.
Through the steam reforming, which when it comes to the environment doesn't make sense at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of CO2 emission, it would be better to actually burn the natural gas rather than, you know, produce hydrogen out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we are calling the clean energy strategy is really saying that hydrogen only makes sense when you produce it out of renewables. You know, that's not a secret. It's the only actual approach to have hydrogen as the fuel of the future, to produce it out of renewable sources.
Okay. So this is very exciting. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Is there anything else we should know about this? We've looked under the hood. We've had a test drive. It works on hydrogen. H2, it says. And good luck getting it here sooner rather than later. We'll do our part.
That's good, and, actually. No, that's important.
And yeah, maybe we can get our name on the waiting list for pilot drivers.
Yeah.
It's not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Tubes. Why? Enormous tubes. Massive, massive tubes. It really is the Internet consumer bill of rights. Because you got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the Internet commercially. The world has turned against this. If your own personal Internet, that is you and me. You and me is that right? Tubes. The Internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
Laughing at the Truth, AM 1320.
It's a series of tubes.
Welcome back to the program, and a couple of weeks ago we chatted with Mark Harris about his new book called Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. And it's such a comprehensive, well-researched book that we didn't want to just, you know, do half of it. So we invited him back, and he was happy to oblige to talk about some of the issues we really didn't get to. So welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Betsy.
And even since we last spoke, there was a story about some controversy over the, you know, environmental and health problems as a result of cremation. And a lot of people have seen cremation as maybe perhaps a more natural way to dispose of, you know, one's remains, and yet it's not so natural in some ways. So talk about that. What did you find, and, you know, what's your position, if you have one?
Well, my position generally is that when you look at the range of alternatives out there, from the standard funeral all the way up to a burial in a natural cemetery, you know, cremation, I think, when you look at what's greener, is a lot more green than the standard burial, but certainly not as green as, you know, burial in someone's backyard wrapped in nothing but a shroud and no embalming fluids.
Which, by the way, your book found that that's not illegal in many states, which was surprising to me.
That's right. In many places, it's allowed, particularly if you're in a rural area or an agricultural area. But one of the issues, and probably the main issue, and it's received some attention recently, is mercury pollution. Now, you know, mercury is an issue because it's a toxic metal, and, you know, ingestion of mercury is linked to, you know, brain damage in humans, fertility problems, problems with the nervous system development, particularly in the young. Mercury is an issue in cremation because it's a major ingredient in the silver fillings or the dental amalgams that fill the heads of many of us baby boomers. In the course of cremation, that mercury is vaporized. It doesn't disappear. It goes up the smokestack where it's carried by prevailing winds and deposited onto the ground and onto bodies of water. You know, if there are fish in those waters, they take up that mercury, and when we eat those fish, we ingest a tiny bit of mercury. You know,
I was just thinking that some of the things we didn't know.
Really. I mean, if we wanted to be environmentalists, we really should have listened to our mothers and, you know, brushed better, or, you know, just had fewer fillings. But I guess the question is, you know, how big an issue is this, Betsy? And I know that that's been in the news of late. And it's hard to say. You know, in part it depends on whose numbers you believe. I mean, the EPA, when it did its calculations in the late 1990s in conjunction with the cremation industry, they said it's not a big deal. We're only emitting through our crematoria in the U.S. and Canada, you know, 320 pounds a year. But various consumer groups, including the Zero Mercury campaign, says it's a lot more than that. You know, it's up to 5,000 pounds. So, but regardless of who you believe, I mean, that said, it's certainly better to have less mercury in the environment than more.
Well, now they're not using mercury in fillings anymore, are they? Aren't they using some kind of porcelain filling now?
That's right. They have various composite resins that they're using. I have two kids. One's a teenager, and one's 9 years old. They've never had a cavity, and if they did have a cavity, it would probably not be filled with an amalgam that contained mercury.
Okay, so this is a temporary problem. I mean, in the big picture, just a couple more decades till we baby boomers are history. What a depressing thought. But
we have to
save the planet first. So what do you recommend based on everything that you've seen? God forbid if someone in your family, you know, were to go, you know, older relative, of course. What would you recommend they do now that you're kind of an expert on this?
Well, I think it's a very personal decision. I have a range of options in the book, and I think I laid them out generally from less to more green, but I think it really depends on what you're comfortable with. I'm one of these Pisces who has never been really that comfortable in the water, so the idea of a sea burial, while it might be beautiful, does not particularly appeal to me. But I know some people don't like the idea of their body going into a ground, in the ground. So for them, the sea burial might be a really beautiful way to rejoin the elements. So I think it depends. The greenest, quote, greenest, if you want to put it that way, burial, I think really is burial in your rural backyard where you're buried perhaps in a shroud or a very minimal coffin, no embalming fluid, no burial vault, and that can also be true in a natural cemetery where you're buried directly into the ground with none of the falderal of the standard funeral, and then in those cases you're actually preserving land from development, and also some of them have ecological restoration schemes where they use the burials to restore the land to some kind of more pristine condition than it was.
So that may be the ideal, but of course that's not the reality today. I mean, for most people, they either live in a city or in an urban area, the suburbs. Yeah. And many people, let's face it, we're a mobile society. We move around a lot, and you probably wouldn't want to leave Grandpa Harry behind for the next owners. So even though that is the optimum, I guess, it's not something that we're probably going to see grow. It's the opposite.
True, although even since writing this book, the number of natural cemeteries springing up in this country are growing. You know, there was one when I started writing the book. Now there are six. There are 20 more in the planning stages. So I think it would be a lot easier to go to a natural cemetery at some point. And cremation is rising. It used to be just a couple of percentage points of each death was cremated. Now we're up to 30%. And really, by the turn of the, by mid-century, we'll have more cremations than burials.
Okay, do you think we'll see a sort of, conventional cemeteries offering more like a natural section, like they sometimes divide up, different religious groups? Or is it going to have to be a standalone green cemetery based on what you've learned?
Oh, that's a great question, and I think it's going to be more of the former than the latter. I think it's going to be we're already seeing changes to the funeral industry, and I think we call it green burial, but it's more than green burial. It's sort of more natural way to go, and already we're seeing funeral homes across the country offering refrigeration instead of embalming, and I think it will be it'll only be a certain amount of time before we end up seeing cemeteries offering a section of their grounds for vaultless burials, as they have in when they have a Jewish section of a cemetery, that's what they offer. And I think the market's going to drive this to change the funeral industry.
Mark, we just have about 30 seconds left. What's next for you after you cover the end? Where do you go from there?
Boy, I'm still covering the end. This is one of these ongoing stories, so it's hard to imagine to find another story that has been this meaty and this juicy, and really this fulfilling.
And underreported, undercovered. I think that's what you've really tapped into.
Yeah. Well, I hope it opens channels of communication for me.
And let's face it, we baby boomers are getting up there in age, so it's a timely topic. Well, stay healthy, Mark Harris, and we'll do the same.
You too. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Mark, for the great work. Good luck with the book. It is Grave Matters, A Journey Through the Modern Funeral Industry to a Natural Way of Burial. That does it for this edition of EcoTalk. We have reached the end of this.
You don't get to do a farewell tour unless you absolutely, positively swear you'll go away. This goes for Cher, Michael Jordan, and if the Eagles reform one more time, I'm going to stab them with my steely knives until I just can kill the beast. New rule, stop leaving messages on my answering machine saying it's me. I already have a me in my life, me. And frankly, if we were that close, I'd have given you the number to the phone that I answer. All right, ready, new rule number.